rest. Tomorrow we fight. I will see you tomorrow for another edition of the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Thanks for joining me.
Prison doors swung open. Mothers hugged their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns.
This is the Quality News Network. The terror detainee bill that the House passed yesterday is now in the Senate's hands and could land on President Bush's desk tomorrow. It authorizes terror suspects to be prosecuted in a military court system, but Democrats say the bill gives the president too much power in deciding what constitutes a war crime and what types of interrogation techniques can be used. Earlier today, the Senate narrowly rejected an amendment sponsored by Republican Senator Arlen Specter and Democrat Patrick Leahy. It would have given suspected terrorists the right to challenge their detention in federal court. On Capitol Hill, the House passed the Iran Freedom Support Act. It imposes mandatory sanctions on people and companies who provide support for Iran's weapons programs. The Senate is expected to act quickly on the bill as lawmakers leave tomorrow for a break before midterm elections. An audio tape purportedly from the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq calls for more attacks and the abduction of foreigners. It also implores explosives experts and nuclear scientists to become active in the jihad against the West. In Baghdad today, officials found about 40 tortured bodies dumped at various locations. 21 others were killed in other violence, including a bombing and shooting. Also, a U.S. soldier died yesterday from injuries he suffered in an attack. In London, a leaked document from a researcher at a defense think tank accuses the Pakistani intelligence agency of indirectly supporting al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. It also calls on the Pakistani president, General Pervez Musharraf, to disband the agency. In the next few days, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld hailed the decision as a, quote, bold step forward. U.S. troops say the number of attacks along Afghanistan's eastern frontier recently have tripled. Traveling in Slovenia, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld commented on the finding in April's National Intelligence Estimate Report. He said it's impossible to know how many terrorists have been created as a result of the war and that intelligence reports are sometimes, quote, flat wrong. You're listening to QNN.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Several prominent scientists have formed a political organization, Scientists and Engineers for America, with the goal of promoting politicians to make public policy based on scientific evidence. The group says it formed because politicians are suppressing scientific evidence about issues such as global warming and stem cell research. Billionaire Richard Branson today unveiled the interior of the spacecraft he's building. He hopes to offer space travel to the public as soon as 2009. The Commerce Department reports that the U.S. economy grew at a 2.6% rate in the spring, but some analysts say the slowing economy likely means the Fed has no reason to raise interest rates again. The Labor Department says that last week the number of new unemployment benefit applications fell to 316,000, down 6,000 from the previous week. IBM is the latest computer company to recall Sony laptop batteries. IBM is recalling 526,000 of the lithium-ion batteries used in ThinkPad notebook computers. Microsoft plans to sell its new Zoom music player for $250. The rival to the popular Apple iPod goes on sale November 14th. Light sweet crude settling at $62.76 today, a 76 cents rather. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 29 points at 11,718. NASDAQ up 7, S&P 500 up 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Oh, hell. It is when the inclination to merely start screaming, or what Walt Whitman referred to as a barbaric yawp, takes one over that one must therefore not scream, not yawp. There's cause to scream. There is cause to cry out in alarm. There is fire in this land. Death is walking this land on its twin legs of ignorance and fear. But if we scream, we run the risk of panic. And we must not panic. We will not panic. We must be resolute. The vote is still taking place in the Senate. In a way, no. Clinton, no. Harkin, no. Byrd, no. Rockefeller, aye. Landrieu, aye. Even Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas mustered up a no vote. Now, I'm not, no. Don't think me some sort of misty-eyed schoolgirl who doesn't realize that there was an opportunity to stop this damned thing in its tracks that they could have filibustered. We'll wait and see what the final total was, but they could have filibustered. But they were afraid. Our poor Senate Democrats operate in nothing but fear. Senate Republicans go on TV and say, well, the world can do without Lindsey Graham, but we must have fair procedures in our laws. And then he bends over and takes it for George Bush. Because, here, let me share something with you from the bill they're voting on as we speak. Because he was saying, you know, I'm a lawyer. I'm a lawyer and an officer and a gentleman. And so he was going to stand up for the rule of law. Well, here's what it means to stand up for the rule of law for Lindsey Graham, legal light and sign of jurisprudence and son of South Carolina. Section 6E1, this is what it adds to Section 2241 of Title 28 United States Code. No court, justice, or judge shall have jurisdiction to hear or consider an application for a writ of habeas corpus filed by or on behalf of an alien detained by the United States who A, is currently in United States custody, and B, has been determined by the United States to have been properly detained as an enemy combatant or is awaiting such determination, or is awaiting such determination, or is awaiting such determination. How long do you have to wait? It doesn't matter. It could be a day, it could be a week, it could be a month, it could be a year, it could be a 1,000 years, it could be a lifetime in prison awaiting the determination of the United States that such a person is an enemy combatant. It could be you. I've got a friend down Boone County. He used to look at me and he'd say, "Oh, Bob, don't worry about it. Ain't nothing ever gonna be all right, no how, no way." You know what? I used to accuse him of being a pessimist. He was a realist. Take solace in this, progressives, liberals, decent Americans. If you keep your head down and don't make waves, the mantle of fascism is light upon you. There's lots to enjoy in the fascist state. Why, there are very fast race car races virtually every day on the weekend. On Saturdays, we all root for our alma maters to give the old college try at the football game. On Sundays, they do it professionally. Throughout the week, during most of the year, someone is playing professional baseball or basketball. From July through June, they play hockey. Walmart is open for your shopping convenience. The police are there to protect and to serve. The trains and planes will run on time. Yes, they will. The fire department will come out as long as they have money to do so. If there is a cat up a tree or a house on fire, if you have a water main break, the water company will show up. If the gas goes out, the gas company will show up. The power company will try to make sure that the electric comes back on after an ugly thunderstorm. The mantle of fascism, friends, is light. Is it so light, I ask, that you would know that it isn't there? You'll know it's there. The only problem is that you'll only know it's there when they decide for you to come to understand that. Let's read that again. No court, no justice, no judge shall have jurisdiction to hear or consider an application for a writ of habeas corpus filed by or on behalf of an alien detained by the United States who A, is currently in the United States custody, and B, has been determined by the United States to have been properly detained as an enemy combatant or is awaiting such determination. You see, when they're trying to figure out whether or not you're an alien or not and whether or not you're an enemy combatant, your ass is rotten in jail. Yours? Mine. Agnes doesn't look good in blaze orange. Agnes doesn't look good upside down. Agnes doesn't look good on a waterboard. Neither do I. Neither do you. But Jay Rockefeller just said that's all okay. Mary Landrieu of Louisiana just said, that's all okay. Scads of Republican said it was all okay. God. I want to share something with you, if I may, please. I'll come to the phones in due time. The phone number is 877-443-2366. I promise you I will. Thomas Jefferson, considered to be among the greatest, of course, thinkers that that this country has ever known. The habeas corpus, you know, what they just voted to kill. The habeas corpus secures every man here, listen to the phrase, alien or citizen, against everything which is not law, whatever shape it may assume. That's a letter from Thomas Jefferson to A.H. Rowan of 1798. That's a very, very important phrase because these right-wingers are fond of playing at scholastics and pretending they understand the intents of the framers of the Constitution. The habeas corpus, says President Jefferson, secures every man here, alien or citizen, against everything which is not law, whatever shape it may assume. Now, of course, central to all of this, if you watch the proceedings today, central to all of this has been an abiding argument by the Republicans, the thugs, the fascists. There he goes. He's calling names again. No, I'm not calling names. Damn it, when you are, what? I call tigers, tigers. I call jackals, jackals. I call hyenas, hyenas. Vultures are vultures, and fascists are fascists. When the fascists pretend that their arguments in favor of this legislation, this rewrite, this utter trashing of 800 plus years of Anglo-American jurisprudence, they say, well, you know, the provisions of the United States Constitution do not apply to people who are not United States citizens. Yes, they do. The habeas corpus secures every man here, alien or citizen, against everything which is not law, whatever shape it may assume. In his first inaugural address of 1801, Jefferson said, "Freedom of the person under the protection of the habeas corpus, I deem one of the essential principles of our government." In a letter to James Madison in 1787, Thomas Jefferson said, "The Bill of Rights should provide clearly and without the aid of sophisms for the eternal and unremitting force of the habeas corpus laws." 1789, he writes to James Madison, wishing he could have had a little bit more. He says, "The following addition to the Bill of Rights would have pleased me. No person," this is him, this is what he would have written, "no person shall be held in confinement more than blank days after he shall have demanded and been refused a writ of habeas corpus by the judge appointed by law, nor more than blank days after such a writ shall have been served on the person holding him in confinement, and no order given on due examination for his remandment or discharge, nor more than blank hours in any place of a greater distance than blank miles from the usual residence of some judge authorized to issue the writ of habeas corpus, nor shall that writ be suspended for any term exceeding 1 year, nor any place more than blank miles distant from the station or encampment of enemies or insurgents." Damnation! In 1789, Thomas Jefferson was considering the effect of habeas corpus upon insurgents! And these addle-pated, swift-backed boobies have the nerve to stand up and pretend that the American people have no knowledge whatsoever of their own history and their own leaders and the formation of their own government. Damn them! Saturday night, I was in Charleston. And at the end of it all, took a moment with Senator Rockefeller and I said, "Listen, I need you to guard habeas corpus this week. There is no more precious American right than habeas corpus. And he's standing there shaking my hand. He's a very tall man. He says, well, I understand that, and I'm not even a lawyer. No, you didn't, Jay. Jay, no, you didn't, because you voted in favor of this stinking, stinking law. Even Senator Byrd got this one right. Even Senator Byrd got this one right. Why suspend the habeas corpus in insurrections and rebellions? The parties who may be arrested may be charged instantly with a well-defined crime. Of course, the judge will remand them. If the public safety requires that the government should have a man imprisoned on less probable testimony than in other emergencies, let him be taken and tried, retaken and retried while the necessity continues, only giving him redress against the government for damages. Examine the history of England. See how few of the cases of the suspension of the habeas corpus laws have been worthy of that suspension. They have been either real treason, wherein the parties might as well have been charged at once, or sham plots where it was shameful they should ever have been suspected. Yet for the few cases wherein the suspension of the habeas corpus has done real good, that operation has now become habitual, and the minds of the nation most prepared to live under its constant suspension. Thomas Jefferson to James Madison, 1788. I'm thunderstruck with all of this. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. This is what I expect of the United States Senate. We talk about taking back the Senate in the name of the Democratic Party. What the hell are they going to do if we do? I mean, let's do it. Let's try. Let's try one more time. But you know what? The Republicans, I don't know what the final vote count is. One of you can help me with that. The Republicans presented their usual solid wall of support for their up or down vote. But we Democrats had defections by people like Rockefeller and Mary Landrieu. And by the way, message to Florida voters, Florida Democrats, if you were ever looking for a reason to vote for independent Brian Moore, try this. Mr. Nelson, I. That's right. The more tanned, more well-rested looking version of Joe Lieberman voted today to throw away the habeas corpus proceedings that have stood as a bedrock of this nation from time immemorial and in Anglo-American jurisprudence for 800 years at least. They did. They just did. That's all there is to it. Let's go to the phone. Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Well, to paraphrase FDR, this is a day that will live in infamy.
It is.
My husband served in two wars, World War II and Korea. My father served on the old aircraft carrier Wasp, when it was torpedoed in the Solomon Islands. He dove into burning oil. And he did it for this?
I know. There's an 81-year-old man sitting in my living room that's asking himself the same question,
yeah,
Susan.
I spent most of the day prior to this vote calling up senators all over the country.
Mm-hmm. I did the same.
I had the pleasure of calling John McCain a traitor after I heard what he said. Any senator who voted for this bill, as far as I'm concerned, is a traitor.
Well, let's back up, Susan. We might want to expand that definition just a little bit, because once again, I remind you and everyone else that they could have filibustered this. They could have at least tried.
That was going to be my next point. I screamed bloody murder to the Democratic senators. Why haven't you filibustered this thing? Where are you? Where's your spine? And they couldn't give me.
They have no answer.
Yeah.
See,
and they're just as worthless as the Republic.
No, they may be worse, Susan, because a coward dies but once, a hero dies but once, but a coward dies a thousand deaths.
And
these people, these mugwump Democrats have been cowards. Okay, they are cowards, pure and simple cowards, because they were afraid. Here it is. Oh well, you know, the election's almost here, and we can't have attack ads out there. We don't want the Republicans out there saying that, you know, we didn't do the, you know, that we stood up. You know, we fight for the terrorists. We care more about the terrorists. No,
he's already doing it. There was an article on Yahoo.
Yeah.
Bush attacks Democrats for being soft on terror. Come on, guys. What was the point?
They are going to do it to these Democrats, whether they stand up or whether they do not. They had a chance to fight on their feet or die on their knees. They chose the latter.
Yeah, I'm dying on their knees and giving them, the Republicans, what Monica gave Clinton. I'm dying to hear what Oberman has to say about this. I just wish Mike had access to a microphone, because, oh boy, would he be in fine form.
I know he would.
I, frankly, my only advice to anybody who is a non-citizen or is married to a non-citizen, get out of the country while you still can.
Well,
it's no longer safe in this country for you, because if he can't get you legally, he will make up an excuse. Go someplace where it's safe.
And he will find a compliant Congress to pass any
yes.
law that he deems necessary to preserve not freedom, but his power.
And frankly, I have to tell you, if I had the way to do it, if I had the means, I would be leaving this country, too. This is no longer the country that I grew up in. I'm just sick.
I know. And I have no solace for you, Susan.
Yeah.
I wish I did.
Yeah.
This is the bitter medicine we take without the lump of sugar in front of it.
Yeah, this country, and the message boards are just going wild. And what's crazy is the conservative posters are just gleeful as all get out. They think this is wonderful.
Well, if by some, I have a mean streak, Susan. I really do. For all the lovable teddy bear that I come across as on the air, you can laugh at that. I have a mean streak, and I keep thinking, boy, do I want to get power back. And I want to use these laws against Republicans for all I'm worth. Can you imagine detaining Rush Limbaugh while he's on one of his sex runs to the Dominican Republic, and detaining him as an enemy combatant, and putting his fat bilious hide in a Navy brig for about 15 years?
You just made my day.
You know, this is a double-bitted axe.
Yeah, and I think that's why he included that little bit to keep him from getting prosecuted for it. However, there is such a thing as impeachable offenses, and he hasn't been pardoned for that. We can still toss him out of office.
Well, I don't know if he can pardon himself, George Bush. I honestly don't know. But Susan, it's a dark day in American history. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of these eclipses lately.
That sound you hear is all of the great presidents from Jefferson, Lincoln, Kennedy, and then throw in Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King. They're all rolling over in their graves.
Yes. Yes, they are. And Dr. Bill today was talking about FDR's second American Bill of Rights. I fear we've lost the first one.
Oh yeah, isn't that?
I would give anything in my power to be able to say something flip or something funny right now.
I don't think there is anything funny. You have a nice night, Mike. I mean, not Mike, Bob.
You honor me, Susan. You honor me with that. I'll try. I'll try to hang on, okay? You do the same.
Keep punching, and if you end up holding off the Gitmo, I'll look over in the next cell. I'll probably be in it.
Yeah, you may very well. We may all. It ain't going to be Gitmo, though, Susan. It's going to be Kokomo. It's going to be somewhere in Alaska or burning in the godforsaken, in some godforsaken corner of the desert in Utah. They're already built.
Where?
They're already staffed.
Either way.
The razor wire already faces inward and not outward.
Yeah, either way.
I'll be looking for you,
though. If I'm trapped here, I'm going to take an honor guard with me.
And a girl.
I may go down, but I'm going to have somebody to pay the ferryman fee.
I understand that. I understand that feeling completely. Susan, you have a good evening.
Look,
thank you for being an American when Americans are scarce.
Thank you.
Peace.
Blessed be.
And you too. It is 1:30. Let's, you know, these breaks are kind of artificial sometimes. Let's keep it rolling. Is that David from Maine? Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
For once, you sound more upbeat than I am.
I don't get emotional over these things. I don't know why. It just doesn't affect me. I guess because I'm in a place like Maine. It's way out from the big cities, and it's out of a lot of the red state territory. But the one thing I wanted to hit people to immediately, since we're in this new age, is Firefox has just announced a client for an IP flipping without a proxy. And I think that that's important in these days and age. And some security analysis from Firefox made it, and they were concerned about people tracking and spying. And basically what it does is it just basically flips your IP frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not on a proxy server. You don't have to log on to a server. You just use this browser client. The only bad part about it is it's lag time. So you would use this for government, emailing government officials, visiting sites that you would be concerned about, that the government would concern you, an enemy combatant or something. Or something of that nature. And So I want to give the link to that.
Go ahead.
In a second. Where is? I sent it to you. You can put it on your site.
Okay.
I can't find that link right now for some reason. Then the second thing I wanted to talk about. Oh, here it is. Torpark.nfshost.com. Torpark.nfshost.com. And for
how do you spell the first part?
That's a good question. TORPARK.
Okay.
.nfso.com. I haven't forgotten about the people who chat on Instant Messenger. Scatterchat.com has developed a system that's encrypted for your emails and your online messaging systems. So go to scatterchat.com as well. These are just tools to help people, so they're not surveilled and judged as enemy combatants for some of the dissident information that they're looking at, or if they're a dissident themselves. So keep that in mind. I just wanted to keep that at the top of the hour, and I thought that might help some people.
Well, I appreciate that, because I think we need what help we can get right now.
The second thing I wanted to get into was back to the National Intelligence Terror Estimate thing, where at that press conference, I was about to get into the last statement, but I didn't have time. And a reporter summed up what Mr. Snow said in over an hour. He just said, "Can I just go back to your argument, just so I'm clear? There's another way to say it, that the American should." Wait. That's not it. Where is it? That the Americans should take comfort because while there may be more seeds of terrorist ideology across the globe, they're not in full bloom, full operational bloom. And then Tony Snow says, That's probably that's a good way of putting it. So there you go, people.
Be happy. It hasn't grown to.
Be happy. More seeds of terror. Now. What it was important to realize about the whole terror estimate is we have statistics, people, from all the way from 1991 to 2005. And Larry Johnson has made a post on Huffington Post. If you go there. I gave you the link, and you can put it on your site.
Okay.
And basically what it does is he breaks down all the data so you understand how much the terrorist attacks have increased since 1991 to 2005. We all know they've increased, but a lot of us don't know exactly what numbers we're talking here.
Yeah, we don't know the extent.
Right. This puts it in bar graph form. So in 1991, you have a total incidence of, we're looking at 560. 1992, it goes down to like 300. But the spike, again, the spike is huge in 2004 and 2005. And it shouldn't come to no surprise. And we're talking over 2,600 or 700 total incidents in 2004. In 2005, it says somewhere between 1,800 or maybe 1,700 or 1,800. But anyways, what he says is I have written repeatedly on this fact, and it has been that I'm told the judgment of the intelligence community for at least 2 years. The statistics on terrorist activity until this year were published in the State Department's annual report on terrorism. The Bush administration tried to not publish the report last year because the data showed an unprecedented surge in international terrorist attacks. The following chart shows the bad news. A significant terrorist incident is one in which a person was killed, wounded, or kidnapped. The statistics tell a very clear and simple story. I bet someone who can read My Pet Goat can figure it out.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Right. The total number of international terrorist incidents, both significant and non-significant, declined until 2002. The number of significant incidents increased steadily starting in 1992. Most of the significant incidents were caused by radical Islamic extremists. 2004 marked the single largest increase in terrorist activity ever recorded since the CIA started keeping records dating back to 1968. If that's not a talking point, I don't know what is. The fourfold.
Well, it is, but wait, David, wait. That is a talking point. No argument from me.
No, I mean for the Democrats.
No, I know that's who you mean.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you need someone who's willing to fight back, who wants to stand on their feet and fight as opposed to live on their knees.
Right.
And right now, we got a bunch who want to live on their knees. Now, I'm not, there were 134 House Democrats yesterday who stood up against this thuggish bill, okay? Something on the order of 34 voted against it in the Senate. Not enough to even muster a filibuster.
I'm baffled why Feingold didn't stand up for a filibuster since he was in safe territory. I'm baffled
because
by that
the rest of the Democratic Party is fairly licking its chops, David. They are salivating at the prospect of having power back and finally being able to determine who gets to use which room for a change and not have to hold hearings in the basement.
I saw one of the funniest sticker banners on a website. It said it had a yellow ribbon.
Mm-hmm.
It said, "Democrats, some more sensitive imperialism."
Well, there are those in the party, David, for whom that is an applicable moniker.
I mean, I think people, it comes down to control, ultimate control, and people get, you know what it is, and people get paranoid when the population increases at large spikes. Like, how are we going to control these people? And they get these crazy ideas in their head. Well, we can do this and we can do that. And because immediately they think people are just going to go into utter chaos. But what is really funny is by thinking that, they almost will it to the effect of people going to chaos all around the world, which is really just like probably one of the most tragic things that people have so they can do so much, and instead they listen to consultants and advisors who are so paranoid.
Well, the consultants and the focus groupers have been the ones who have destroyed the Democratic Party since 1994. It was an unwillingness of the Democrats to stand up and fight against the likes of Newt Gingrich that led to their demise in 1994, and it's been the Bush Light aspect and the DLC types who have kept us out of power since.
Well, I think you can rebuild. I just think I just don't have the question of how long it will take or when, and if how much the internet and technology will speeding up the pace. I would imagine it would take at least 16 or 17 years to get to a level where a lot of people would be content. But that's taking out a consideration of the corruption, everything like that. So, I mean, I think, you know, it goes back to blood and sacrifice, and maybe we just won't, you know, that this is tragic to think about it, but maybe we just won't see that what we're working for at all.
Well, I can't give up, David.
I won't give up. I mean, we won't, but our children will. That's what I mean. I'm not going to be that nihilistic and gloomy. You know, I just think people have to keep in consideration that a lot of what's happening right now, problems, human nature and sin and all of this. It takes part in their subconscious, and we just have to just continue on the path that we are, and just hope that, you know, we can bring it back to a level of acceptance for us. I don't believe we're ever going to get the. Now this might be the gloomy aspect of me, but I don't believe we'll ever get the country back that people want. It's going to be the country that we sort of want, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm looking at an email right here, David.
Yeah.
Came from Democrats.com.
Those people, I got to tell you.
George Bush is trying to legalize torture, not just to exempt sadistic CIA interrogators from the law, but also to exempt himself. That's because George Bush could be tried for approving torture under the War Crimes Act of 1996 and face the death penalty. I hope you'll take a moment to take action. You know what? Thousands, tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of Americans took action today, David. The only people who didn't were the mugwump DLC Democrats in the Senate.
But another bigger question is do you think these aides that answered the phone? Now, I'm being pessimistic in this and cynical, but every time I get the answer, I get the feeling that I don't get past them. They just get those thoughts just go right in the recycle bin. What I just passed somebody, and I keep asking myself, why the heck do I keep continuing to do that if I feel that way? And it's just like a reflex, I guess. Continue on with the path, even though that the fires are burning and raising around you.
Well, you know, I want to be careful. Am I making a mistake? I mean, that was the vote on the actual bill that I saw go down, wasn't it?
I think. Now someone said that.
I don't think that was an amendment.
Now, someone said that we lost habeas on the Hartman show. I was listening today. Ratner, I think his name is.
Yeah.
He said that we lost the habeas corpus bill. I'm not sure if they voted yet on this.
I've been watching them vote, and it looks like a typical screw the Constitution vote with a handful of mugwump. If I'm wrong, I'll be surprised.
Well,
because this said, I was looking at the screen underneath, and it said voting on what was it, 3930.
Right.
So yeah, I'm pretty sure that was that bill. And that's why I'm wondering why this email that came from Democrats.com is telling me. We are literally days away from action in Congress on a proposal to blah 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 all the things that just got voted on.
But the funny thing is that we lost the habeas corpus today, so you would think that they would have made that clear that they were voting on that today. That's according to the Ratner. So, I mean, the only thing I can say about habeas corpus is I hope all the people who engage in dissidents and have like Mike Malloy and all of those two, they get a bunker and they steal it tight.
I tell you, you know, I don't understand Jay Rockefeller. I don't understand Mary Landrieu. I don't understand Bill Nelson of Nebraska or Ben Nelson or Bill Nelson of Florida or Ben Nelson of Nebraska. I guess they think that they're above it all and they can't be disappeared. But you know what? We're dealing with people that you know, if you compromise with them, they see that as a sign of weakness. They see that as a sign to press on and make you give up more. I'm sure I know how Joe Lieberman voted on this.
We do the work and they smile. That's the American way now, I guess.
My God. My God. David, thanks so much.
No problem, Bob.
Have a good night.
Later.
Bye now. I'm not trying to be scatterbrained or anything like that. No, that was the real vote. That wasn't on some amendment. That was the real vote on whether or not we're going to torture in America and whether or not we're going to jail people outside the purview of the Constitution. Four words, Court of Star Chamber. As Thomas Jefferson noted, most of the times when these excesses have been engaged in, they've been engaged in out of sheer thuggishness. I'm paraphrasing. Onward to the phones. Jim joins us from a remote, undisclosed location. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening. How are you?
I've been better.
Okay. Well, I think everybody has been better. But, you know, I have long taken the position. I just expect the worst and hope for the best. And this is the case when the worst happened. But, you know, look throughout our history. And you tell me what happened to Anglo-American jurisprudence when they passed the Alien and Sedition Act, when Lincoln suspended habeas corpus, and when Roosevelt put all those Japanese in internment camps during the war. I mean, you know, there have been instances of what I call ad hoc law before.
Oh, certainly there have been.
And this can be overturned as well.
But do you have any reason to hope that it would be?
Because, well, number one, I think there's a sunset clause in it in the first place. I would hope. I'm sure about that. I haven't read the actual text of the law, but I think that there's a good possibility that this particular instance might cause people to wake up, and it would influence the vote in November and perhaps give us a Congress that might reconsider what they've done. I mean, that's always a possibility. And, you know, as far as the American Republic is concerned, it died a long time ago. And you know it and I know it. We're just beginning to realize it. That's just my personal opinion, Bob. And
well,
my kind ends, everybody's got one, and most of them stink.
And yeah, and you're, no, well, I wouldn't even go that far.
But I mean, you know, that's just the way I feel. I mean, I've lived half my life without benefit of habeas corpus anyway. So.
Well, yeah, you mean through military? Yeah.
Yeah.
This is.
I mean, you know, I'd say nothing these people do surprises me, and. They will do anything they can to hold the reins of power, and I would expect George Bush to try to CYA in the event that somebody might want to come back at him and put him in the dock like they did the people at Nuremberg. But I can only hope that maybe these laws will be overturned. But David was right when, you know, he was talking about calling people on the Hill. You're going to get a staffer up there that's about 18, 19 years old.
Who couldn't care less.
Who couldn't care less, and he's going to deep six the thing. And when I call there, I always ask to speak to the chief of staff. And if I can't get a chief of staff, I get a supervisor.
That's good advice.
Yeah, and I just say, look, I said, no disrespect, but I said, you're just answering the phone. And if you want to get your message across to somebody, you have to be pretty strident, and you have to be pretty insistent, and they'll get upset because they don't want to look bad in front of their boss. But you know, I'm not there to have a popularity contest with staffers on Capitol Hill who are just there being cycled through the system.
Right.
But unfortunately, this is what were the actual numbers in the Senate?
I haven't seen. I saw someone who said 65-34.
Well, that's a pretty that's almost two-thirds majority in favor of this.
Yeah, and that's all of the Republicans probably.
Oh,
and a big old handful of Democrats. Like I said, even Byrd managed to get this one right.
He voted against it.
Yeah. Rockefeller, on the other hand, voted in favor of it.
And he's on the Intelligence Committee.
Yeah. But as he told me Saturday night, well, I'm not a lawyer. So, you know, habeas corpus doesn't mean that much to him.
Well, I mean, as a member of the government, he certainly understands the definition of what deliver the body means, I'm sure. I'm sure he remembers that from his first year Latin, but nonetheless, what else does it enable these people to do, to use modified forms of torture?
Well, yeah. The thing is, it says very clearly, torture shall not be allowed. But then it sort of provides a little weasel room and says, however, anything that's not defined as torture, George Bush it can be allowable. So all they have to do is say, well, waterboarding isn't torture. And boom, waterboarding's legal. And he gets immunity for everything he's done up to this point.
Well, I expected that, to tell you the truth, Bob. I really did. I expected it.
You know, what's really kind of sickening, the whole thing's sickening, Jim, but here are the things that we can try other people for doing, okay?
Yep.
This is there's a huge laundry list inside this bill of substantive offenses. Murder of protected persons, attacking civilians, attacking civilian objects, attacking protected property, pillaging, denying quarter, taking hostages, employing poison or similar weapons, using protected persons as a shield, using protected property as a shield, torture, cruel or inhuman treatment, intentionally causing serious bodily injury, mutilating or maiming, murder in violation of the law of war.
What about freedom of speech? Things like that.
Treachery or perfidy? Let's see. Improperly using a distinctive emblem. These are all things that we can punish other people for doing, but we are allowed to do ourselves. Intentionally mistreating a dead body, rape, hijacking or hazarding a vessel or aircraft, terrorism. Here's a fun one. Now, see, they're not going to put anything in there about exercising freedom of speech, Jim. They are not that stupid. But they'll put in a phrase like, providing material support for terrorism or wrongfully aiding the enemy. Do you think that there's not some right winger out there that doesn't think that I wrongfully aid the enemy every night I'm on the air? And everybody on this network, everybody on Air America, Keith Olbermann got an envelope filled with fake anthrax two nights ago.
Well, I would dare say you're probably right. There are people who would be of that opinion in this country. Yeah, there are.
And there are people in the Congress who are of that opinion. I've heard them on the floor. I've heard Tom Coburn. I've heard Saxby Chambliss. I've heard Tom DeLay. I've heard Tom Tancredo. The list is almost endless. These congressional Republicans think that anything that disagrees with them is seditious.
Well, the Alien and Sedition Acts were repealed, and when you've had...
But not after a lot of people were tortured, were tormented under them.
I don't know how many people suffered under those things. I don't think they were on the books that long. Maybe, a year, two?
Now, are you talking about the 19th century ones or the Adams administration ones?
18th century.
Yeah. And then there's what went down around the First World War Sedition Acts.
Right. What about, and how long was habeas corpus suspended under Lincoln?
Duration of the war, more or less.
Okay. Well,
but see, he suspended it by unilateral fiat. I mean, hell, he threatened to throw Chief Justice Taney in prison.
Well, I think it'd be a good idea if he had.
But sometimes you're not helping, Jim.
Taney was the one who, 1896, was passed separate but equal.
No, Taney was a horse's ass. Taney was the author of Dred Scott.
I know.
But no.
Roger B.
What I'm getting at, though, is he did it by unilateral fiat, and he never intended for it not to be returned. This law, Jim, is deemed permanent.
Well, I thought it was a sunset provision.
I'm not taking issue with you, but I have been all over this bill, and I'm damned if I can find it.
I heard there was a sunset clause of 5 years. I don't know. Well, you know, let's
Long enough to get George Bush out of office and outside the long arm of the law, I suppose.
Well, you know, things have happened in history before, and I mentioned it earlier today. But I mean, you've had, I remember in December 11th, 1941, when the Nocturne-Neville decree was promulgated by Adolf Hitler, when people would disappear into the night and fog. And then when the war was going badly, the Sippenhoff decrees, the arrest and apprehension of kin for those soldiers who retreated or who were deemed not to have considered to have behaved heroically in battle. And you see what happened to him. And you see what happens to people who try to, you know, enact laws of this nature, which are repressive. They will last for a season and will be cut down. That's the way I look at it. And if they want to come for me at 4 o'clock in the morning, there's nothing I can do but just try not to wake up my neighbors, I guess. What else?
I think I'm waking up the neighbors.
I mean, this is sort of like, I think we're really beginning to realize once and for all what these people are and what they are intending to do and what their ultimate goals really are.
Yeah. Well, Jim, but you say these people and what they intend to do. My concern is with the definition of these people. Do we include Jay Rockefeller and Mary Landrieu?
They obviously have some reason to support it, and I'd like to know what their reasons are. I would like to ask Mr. Rockefeller, Senator Rockefeller, and Senator Landrieu, exactly why did you vote for this bill, and about how many 15 or 20 other Democrats who may have voted for it? How many Democrats voted for it?
I don't know right now. Last I saw was 65-34. I don't know that to necessarily be the case. Let me check the chat room and see if anybody's got a number for me real quick. I don't see it.
I would like to see why they voted for it. I really would. And the trouble is, you probably will not.
Well, they'll give you a reason, Jim.
I'm afraid that it will be so obvious. It'll just be a lot of obfuscation. I'm sure of it.
Well, look at if Rockefeller, and he's not up there for his health. Okay, he's up there because he likes the power. If he just goes along and gets along and by some hook, crook, or other miracle can be part of a Democratic majority in the Senate, you know, with a loss by, say, we're only two or three Republican losses away from taking the doggone thing, then he gets to be chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And frankly, I think Senator Rockefeller wants that a whole lot more than he wants to protect some arcane Latin legalistic doctrine.
Well, some people, the end justifies the means.
Yeah, it does.
And I don't know. Maybe this is a path that they're taking, in which it might lead to something perhaps better, and this can be repealed or conditions, you know, improved upon. I don't know. But like I say, our history is punctuated with ad hoc legislation of this type. This is not new. This is nothing new to me.
Well, and it may not be. I mean, it has been done before, but I keep looking for us to learn from past mistakes. Our inability to learn from past mistakes indicates that the mistakes that we continue to make will be continuously more egregious, Jim.
Well, the element they're using here is just one word, and I can be. It is they're being pragmatic in their own eyes. Okay.
Okay, I'm seeing here in the chat room that 12 Democrats voted aye.
I'd like to ask those 12 men why they voted aye and just, you know, get an eyeball view. Can you tell me why you voted for this?
Well, we have to protect protect America from those people who would want to hurt America.
Well, I see. Well, I have nothing further to add, and so...
All right. Well, Jim, I thank you. I appreciate it.
Be good. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Pragmatism. I guess I'm just not very pragmatic. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. That's who I am. Your thoughts on this are more than welcome. I'd like to have them. The phone number is 877-443-2366. We'll be back after the news.
Say the gunman involved in yesterday's hostage situation in Colorado High School sexually assaulted at least one of the 16 girls he took hostage. They say he later shot one of the girls in the back of the head as she tried to escape, then committed suicide. The 16-year-old girl later died from her wounds. In Florida, police are searching for a suspect who killed a deputy near a high school today. Another was wounded, as was a police dog. Three schools are under lockdown while the search continues. In Baghdad today, officials found about 40 tortured bodies dumped at various locations. Also, 21 Iraqis were killed, dozens more wounded in a series of bombings and shootings. On Capitol Hill today, Baghdad's police academy was held up as an example of the United States' failures in its $21 billion reconstruction efforts. The academy was deemed a health hazard by U.S. inspectors who found human waste dripping from the ceilings. In Washington, the Senate passed the terror detainee bill, which the House approved yesterday. It authorizes terror suspects to be prosecuted in a military court system. In London, a leaked document from a researcher at a defense think tank accuses the Pakistani intelligence agency of indirectly supporting Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. It also calls on the Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf to disband the agency. Meantime, Musharraf met with British Prime Minister Tony Blair. They brushed aside the report and pledged to support a NATO-led mission to support the Kabul government. In Berlin, 2 days of talks between the European Union foreign policy chief and Iran's chief nuclear negotiator have ended without a deal. Another round of talks will be held soon. The last 2 days of talks had been called Iran's last chance to end the standoff over its uranium enrichment program. At the White House last night, President Bush held a dinner with Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf and Afghan President Hamid Karzai. He urged the neighboring countries to cooperate in the fight against terrorism. In Southern California, more than 4,000 firefighters still battling the day fire in Ventura County. Officials say humidity and erratic winds are now hampering the effort. In the Philippines, a powerful typhoon knocked out more than a dozen power lines, causing a temporary blackout on the main island. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A new medical study finds that parents of children taking medication to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder are 10 times more likely to be taking the medication themselves. Current and former Hewlett-Packard executives appeared before a congressional subcommittee today to answer questions about the media spying scandal. In her testimony, former chairwoman Patricia Dunn expressed regret over how the leak probe was handled. Lawmakers are comparing the scandal to Watergate and Enron. A congressman is asking the Justice Department to delay approval of a merger between AT&T and Bell South. He says that will allow a federal judge to determine whether the two other mergers were in the public interest. Microsoft plans to sell its new Zoom music player for about $250. The rival to the popular Apple iPod goes on sale November the 14th. Light sweet crude settled at $62.76 a barrel in earlier trading today. The Dow Jones briefly rallied past its all-time high of 11,722, set back on January 14, 2000, then retreated. Wednesday, the Dow ended the day at its second highest close ever. At the close, the Dow up 29 points at 11,718, NASDAQ up 7 points at 2270, the S&P 500 up 3 points at 1339. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half minutes after the hour, we continue tonight's discussion. I want to share something with you. I've been looking around for, just to give you an idea of how far or the reach of habeas corpus goes in our history. It's got some roots. I'm Bob, by the way. You knew that. The name is taken from the opening writs. There I get all fired up to do some highfalutin reading and I blow it. The name is taken from the opening words of the writ in medieval times. Although rarely used nowadays, this is from the BBC, it can theoretically be demanded by anyone who believes they are unlawfully detained and it is issued by a judge. Well, now it can't. It does not determine guilt or innocence, merely whether the person is legally imprisoned. It may also be writ against a private individual in detaining another. Think about that. Think about the Minutemen on the southern border who would like to be able to just personally imprison Mexicans coming across. The Habeas Corpus Act passed by the British Parliament in 1679, that would be 1679, that would be the 17th century, guaranteed this right in law, although its origins go back much further, probably to Anglo-Saxon times. Sir William Blackstone, who wrote his famous commentaries on the laws of England in the 18th century, recorded the first use of habeas corpus in 1305. Yeah, I know, 1305. I mean, we're talking about bring out your dead time. But other writs with the same effect were used in the 12th century, so it appears to have preceded Magna Carta in 1215, signed on the field of Runnymede. Its original use was more straightforward. A writ to bring a prisoner into court to testify in a pending trial. But what began as a weapon for the king and the courts became, as the political climate changed, protection for the individual against arbitrary detention by the state. It is thought to have been common law by the time of Magna Carta, which says in Article 39, quote, "No freeman shall be taken or imprisoned or disseized or exiled or in any way destroyed, nor will we go upon him, nor will we send upon him, except upon the lawful judgment of his peers or the law of the land." That's what's gone. That's what they just killed. Now, and to be honest, to be utterly candid, no, it doesn't. Supposedly, it does not affect you and me as citizens. But once you start monkeying with this sort of thing, then it's not much of a leap to get to the point where you can question someone's citizenship. Because you'll note the portion that I read at the beginning of the show says that we can that habeas corpus won't lie while someone is waiting to be determined an enemy combatant. That includes, you know, look, that includes determinations of citizenship. You know, so you rot in jail for a couple of years, you know, some bureaucrat forgets about you, and then one day they go, oh, damn, you know, I forgot to, you know, Bob's a citizen. Let him out now. 2 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road. And all that time, you have not the right to ask anyone why you're being held. Let's go to the phones. Wayne joins us. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program. Thank you for your call.
Hey, buddy, how you doing? Yeah, I know, man.
Little nauseous.
Huh?
Little nauseated.
I'm more nauseated. I'm pissed off.
Well, that too.
I called Senator Byrd and Senator Rockefeller's office again today. You know, and I did, I don't know, last week or Monday or whatever the hell day it is. Again, to, you know, just to say... I want you to vote against this. And, you know, I have to put the same question to Jay Rockefeller as I've been putting to a whole lot of people. How can you call yourself a Christian and support what this man's doing? How can you do that? And, you know, unlike a lot of people that are listening, I get to vote for Mr. Rockefeller.
Or not vote.
Or not vote.
Well, I'm still upset with what Senator Byrd did over Sam Alito, the bankruptcy bill, the tort reform. I'm still upset.
I realize that, but Jay Rockefeller isn't up for election.
No.
He is in 208. And, I want an explanation of that vote. I want a damn explanation. I thought it was going to go down 48-51 like the...
Now, they don't have that kind of courage in the United States Senate, Wayne.
Well, no, but, I mean, earlier in the day, there was some resolution or something that went down 48-51.
Well, I know Senator Byrd offered some sort of an amendment. I saw him arguing in its favor.
Well, that was weak, too.
Yeah.
Now, sunset, you know, 5 years.
Yeah.
And then he got up and said, well, you want to make it 6 or 7?
Do I hear 10?
Yeah. It's, well, apparently these guys aren't emboldened enough. And,
Well, is it that, Wayne, or do they just not care? I mean, what's Rockefeller...
I don't think not care.
What's Rockefeller got to be afraid of, Wayne? He's not up for election.
Well, I mean, you know, Bob, see, that shifts you back to what does he have... to be afraid of, probably nothing, but is he promoting his own self-interest? I'm sorry that I would have to say that, but...
Well, that's what I was trying to get at with Jim, is that this man is vitally, you know, he might not be so interested in habeas corpus, but he is damn sure interested in being chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He's real interested in that.
And, you know, and if, in fact, we do win the Senate, that's where he will be. Will he not?
Yes. But is this...
Is that good for America?
There's the million-dollar question.
Well, yeah, it is. And I want an answer to this vote. I want an answer to this vote. You know, I am from West Virginia. I've met Jay Rockefeller. I've been around in conversations.
Well, that's like I said, you know, Saturday night, Wayne, I looked him in the eye and I said, I hope you will stand up for habeas corpus this week.
And what was his reply?
This is his reply, and I quote, I know what that is, and I'm not even a lawyer.
But apparently he wasn't willing to stand up for it.
That tells me his mind was already made up.
Well, yeah. I'm really upset about that. This whole thing. I mean, you know, unless you have some secret plan that when you do become you know, who knows what games these guys play down there.
Well, here's the whole list of the...
This for that, yada, yada, yada.
Here's the whole list of the treasonous 12.
Okay.
These are the 12 mugwumps who couldn't be bothered to stand up for the Constitution.
Okay.
Carper of Delaware. Johnson of South Dakota. Mary Landrieu of Louisiana. Frank Lautenberg.
Boy, figure her.
Yeah.
Frank Lautenberg?
Yeah.
That's disappointing.
Joe Lieberman. Well.
Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah. Menendez of New Jersey. Nelson of Florida, the tan Lieberman.
Yeah.
Nelson of Nebraska, the Neville Chamberlain of the Democratic Senate, Chamberlain of the Democratic Senate, Pryor of Arkansas, Rockefeller, Ken Salazar of Colorado, and I find this depressing too somehow, although I'm not surprised, Debbie Stabenow, Democrat of Michigan.
Those are all disappointing. It's interesting. Well, we'll have to look it up. I mean, how many of those people are up for re-election this year? Rockefeller isn't. Landry isn't. Is she?
Bill Nelson is.
In Florida.
Yeah, because he's running against Cruella DeVille.
It doesn't matter. Nothing justifies his vote.
No.
Nothing justifies his vote. I don't give a damn. And... I'm very, very disappointed.
Well, look, compare it.
Opportunity to ask Mr. Rockefeller about his vote. You'll probably be standing there, too.
Maybe.
And I want an answer to that. Say that. Well, like I started this out with, how can you call yourself a Christian and support what you just did? I want to know the answer to that question. More than just Jay Rockefeller. All of them. Every damn one of them. So. I'm going to let you go, buddy.
All right, Wayne.
I'll be talking to you.
Good enough. Talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Bye now. And onward to Rick, calling from Texas. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program. Thanks for your call.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I have been significantly better, Rick.
Oh, you have. I know. It's quite a little letdown.
Well, it's not like I hold these people up as heroes anymore, Rick. this doesn't quite rank with finding out about Santa Claus.
Yeah. Now that was devastating.
Yeah. But this is pretty damn depressing. Just once, I want to see him stand up. What would happen to him, Rick?
A backbone?
What would happen to him if they suddenly stood up and punched the bully back in the face and understood that they didn't have to be bullied anymore?
I don't think this group can do that. I think the new group coming in can. I'm not for sure that the old group, or some of the old group, can do that. I don't think they have it in them.
See, I try to think like a strategician, to quote Dear Leader. I try to think in strategic terms. I really do. And, you know, these guys are absolutely wetting their pants to get out of Washington, D.C. and get home and campaign.
Start campaigning. Make sure they get in.
Now, so if you can get 41 senators together, and there are 41 Democrats. Get 41 Democrats together and say, you know, we're going to filibuster this until you save habeas corpus and make it clear that not even George Bush can order the torture of a human being. And then let Bill Frist go nuclear. He's about to be out of office.
Uh-huh.
And watch these guys make a choice between staying there forevermore and not getting the campaign. Or saying, okay, we will put this off and let the next Congress deal with it.
Yeah, that's what it's going to take.
I mean, is that so hard to comprehend, Rick? I mean, you're the guy to ask. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. And I'm not for sure what's going on with Congress other than let's keep our place, let's don't make any waves, let's don't give them anything at all that they can throw back at us. And Bush knows this. He knows that they're not going to fight it because they want to win so bad, and Bush wants to make sure that he does not end up in prison. And
well,
that's why this got pushed through, because he's getting a free ride for everything that he's done, but only in America. If he ever steps outside, he can be kidnapped and taken to The Hague.
Talk like that will get you disappeared while they figure out whether or not you're a citizen.
Oh, my God. You know what? If they want to disappear me, I've already been through hell at the government's hand for a whole year. They can disappear me any day as they wish. And the world would not be any sadder, and it wouldn't matter. You know, Roy, sorry, forgive me. I talked to Roy.
That's okay. I consider that a signal honor, too, Rick.
So kind, Bob. In a way, this doesn't bother me that much because I've always said that if I could go back in history and put a bullet through Hitler's head before he did what he did, I wouldn't do it. I would not do it. All the hell he brought upon Europe, all the hell he brought upon the world, I would not stop it. Because look what has happened in the 60 years since in Europe. For the first time, 60 straight years of peace and intelligence and progress and hope. All because one idiot got to run loose for a while. I'm not for sure I'd stop Bush. Today, a sweet, wonderful nurse, absolutely the best person in the entire world, and I got into an argument for the first time over George Bush.
Really?
Real. And, you know, it was like, I'm not going to discuss this because you cannot convince me. I am not going to discuss this because you cannot convince me. Well, of course I'm not going to be able to because we can't discuss this. The mindset is he is a good man and everything is going to work out just fine and it's going to be like that until things get really bad. And it hasn't got bad enough yet, Bob. I keep saying that. It hasn't got bad enough.
Intelligent
people, it has. I'm sorry.
No. When you say that so reasonably, Rick, that just turns my blood cold. The idea that it's not bad enough yet.
It's going to get worse.
So is this? I had an email, and I'll share it with you here, because I know this is something that would speak to you because it came from another of your fellow Texans.
Huh?
Yeah. And what he says. This is a listener by the name of Quincy from Central Texas.
Good name, too. Good Texas name.
Quincy says, I know you're getting a lot of email today, and I hope you got time to read. I've been listening to Guy and Bruce today, and like Sarge, I'm very angry, trying to hold back tears myself. I see why in the Bible Jesus said, Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And right now America just doesn't know what we're doing to ourselves. And if any religious person is in favor of torturing people, all I can say is shame on them, and I question their beliefs. And this is the nut of Quincy's observation, and I thought it quite astute. Don't they realize they're endangering our fellow Americans in other nations? Back to the religious folks. Do they realize this torture bill is going to be endangering our Christian missionaries overseas? It's making some of these other nations more angry at us, where they're going to hate and despise Christianity and harm our missionaries, as well as other Americans working overseas, doctors, nurses, Peace Corps volunteers.
Doctors Without Borders.
Because we're letting other nations know that it's open season on our fellow citizens to harm and torture and kill them. And I really worry about the safety of our fellow Americans overseas, and if there be any Americans who are not concerned about the implications of this law down the line, again, all I can say is shame on them, and they're not patriotic Americans the way they claim they are. And this is the real stopper for me, because Quincy says, Rick, maybe they need to go to the video store and watch the Faces of Death videos with their children and see what torture is really like. I watched one 10 years ago, and believe me, these videos are hard to watch if a person has a peace of conscience. There's one scene I remember that was filmed in either Honduras or Nicaragua, where they show an actual torture interrogation with electrodes and cigarette burns and ends with the man being hanged. And I think if a sane-minded person saw these videos, they'll change their minds very fast.
But then you'd run into the same thing I ran into today. I'm not going to discuss this. You cannot convince me. See, Quincy makes a good argument. Quincy is an intelligent man, obviously. And his argument is true, and it's straight. But we're dealing with people who cannot allow the cognitive dissonance to enter into their brain. Bush has to be right, or they are wrong. And they can't be wrong. They can't accept that.
Wrongness is not permitted. Well, Rick, I share these things with you because you deal on a daily basis with people's emotional needs and wants, their fears, their hopes. Here's another one. I'll keep the person's name out of it.
Okay.
But the message just says, "You are my dearest comrades. I wish to tell each of you, I'm truly frightened. I will not back down. I will never back down. If I get arrested for sedition or whatever they concoct, please fight for me. I will do the same for you."
Okay, let me say this. He is not frightened. She is not frightened. Whomever it is, they're not frightened. They're speaking out. None of your listeners are frightened. They're braver than the cowards who said, I do not want to discuss it. I'm going to believe what I want to believe. You are a brave man. You speak out. They know your address. They know your name. Every person who stands up and says, this is wrong, is braver than those who will stand back and say, I didn't know the concentration camps were over there. I didn't know they were burning people. I didn't know. This is bravery. Your people are brave. Your people are strong. And your voice is stronger than Keith Overman, because he has to keep his mellow, or he won't exist on TV. You, Bob, have put through an awful lot more than a lot of people. And for anybody to stand up and say, I am scared, shows that they're braver than those who pretend that they're not. When George Bush sat for 7 minutes scared to move, using those kids for a shield against boogeymen who may be flying around, and then jumping on a plane and heading to Nebraska to find a bunker to hide in, that's a coward for you. He didn't go to the Capitol building. He didn't sing God Bless America. He ran until they were sure that all the planes were down. That's a coward. People who speak up on your show, people who listen to you, you, your dear wife, everybody, that's strength. That's courage. That's what it's going to take. Don't give up. Keep the fight. And then get a little payback. These 12 people, fine. Let them vote for this. But when it comes primary time around, make sure they have somebody running against them and make sure this slaps them in the face and bloody them hard. They may win the primary, but they're going to know not to ever betray America again.
Damn good point. I hope there will be primary opposition for Senator Rockefeller in 2008.
I'm afraid I showed a little of my anger, didn't I? Forgive me.
No. That's okay. That's you can do that here, Rick. You know, this is an emboldened place, as Wayne likes to put it. and that being the case, you're right. You know, when it is, our silence is our surrender.
Our silence is surrender. As long as we can speak, as long as we have breath, we better speak, and we better stand.
Because for those who are religious in this crowd, we answer.
You do.
We have an answer to make at a distant meeting.
Mm-hmm. And when I'm asked that question, what did you do? I'm not going to be able to say I was sweet and kind and innocent. And I'll probably burn in hell for some of the things. But no. I'm not going to say that I ever let down another person when I could help.
Well, you know, I think that kind of precludes, you know, I'm not much of a believer in hell.
No, I don't either, but.
But that precludes, you know.
But they
love it. That gets you into the lodge hall, that kind of thinking, Rick.
Yeah, well. one more thing.
Sure.
I know that you're very busy. You got people lined up. thing. You had a caller, I believe it was Sarge, that said something the other day about the VA and how much money he could make and such.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that the Bush administration put out under the cover, and they didn't tell anybody, you haven't heard anything about it, was that if anybody who is disabled, a disabled veteran, if you apply for Medicare or anything, they're going to push you into VA, you're going to get your VA. Then they're going to tell you that's all you deserve. That's all you're going to get. That's wrong. If you have worked 4 quarters before you went in the military or after the military, I guess before the military, before you were disabled, you are entitled to your Medicare disability. So you can get both payments coming in. They will lie to you and tell you you can't. And you may even have to have a lawyer to write them a letter. But the truth is, you can get that. You do not have to live in poverty because you serve. Second thing.
Yeah.
And my books, I've mentioned, that, which I'm going to have to take out now, that I'm a member of Red Cross. Red Cross National has came up with a policy that everybody has to have a criminal background check. I agree with that. I think it's prudent. I think it's wise. I think it's something that needs to be done. They really should. But when you go in to sign up to allow them to do the background check, they have a form that says that they can check everything, including mode of living, your auto registration, your bank account, everything in your life. This is a form that has been put out through Homeland Security.
Oh, dear.
So now, at a time, hurricane season's coming up, at a time when there's only one mental health worker in disaster mental health services and the place where I'm working at now as a volunteer, they're losing us. Only 40% of the people who were volunteering a year ago are now volunteering because they took the time to read the form and what Homeland Security is going to be able to check. Red Cross says, oh, no, we're not going to check any of that stuff. But yet you still have to sign, given over 100% of your personal information to them if they want to check it without you knowing it.
Credit history?
Everything. Everything. Even back to talking to your schoolmates when you were a kid, how you grew up. If you're living with somebody, if you're living with a man, if you're living with a woman, if you're living with a dog, everything. They can talk to your neighbors. They can talk to everybody. You are giving them rights to open your computer files. You're giving them rights to open everything. And 60% of us have decided that we're not going to go for it. And so anyway, I will not be in Red Cross anymore. I'll take that out of there. But this is something that's happened insidiously. It sneaks in. Fascism sneaks into America. Slow, easy pace.
Well, you know, it's like a mosquito bite, Rick. What you scratch is not what the mosquito did.
That's right.
You never knew it when the mosquito bit, because it puts in a little anesthetic to make sure you don't feel the bite.
Absolutely.
You're only scratching your body's objection to it. You're not scratching the bite. And that's fascism, okay?
Fascism.
You're not scratching what fascism does. What's bothering you is the way you respond to fascism.
Personal irritation. And like I said before, when things get bad enough, things will change. If we have the power to change it by that time. But it's going to take an enormous awakening, and I don't see it happening anytime soon. Although I will say that I've had one gentleman here that I have spoken to for 3 years straight, and he walked up to me and says, Rick, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. When you first started talking to me about this stuff, I thought you were just crazy, you know, like all of the mental health people. He says, George Bush scares the hell out of me. I will never vote Republican again. And I said, well, what made the change? And he said, I got kicked out of my church because I refused to sign a petition supporting George Bush. Not that I was against him at the time, but it was the fact that I had to sign it, and I refused, and I watched other people refuse, and they got kicked out. And because our preacher said we had to do it is why I didn't. And then I started looking, I started reading, I started taking this into my own hands and seeing for myself what you've been saying all the time. He says, and I hate saying it so much, but you were right. People do change, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's that day late and a dollar short factor that drives me a little bit nuts.
Yeah, and it's just that one, and there's so many others. But yeah. That's why we need you, Bob. You got to keep kicking. You got to keep screaming. You know, I smile when you scream. When you rave, I cheer. Because that is the voice of the people out there who are the long-time listeners and the no-time callers, who are feeling, who are thinking, who are wanting to know that they're not crazy and they're not alone. And you're the voice in the darkness that keeps them saying, keep what you're doing, keep going.
Thank you, Rick.
If they drag us off, no problem. We'll share the same cell.
If they do, what is mine is yours. And what is your, I hope what is yours is mine.
Well, you head down here, and I guarantee you, you'll be protected.
Yankees. I had to drag out the 45 and make sure. I mean, it's stainless, but I wanted to make sure there weren't any pits on it. I like a 45, Rick.
I just got a brand new one.
45?
Luger.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. Well, you take care, Rick Goodner.
Okay. You have a good day.
Be well. Bye now. That's a heavy mantle. There, it feels like it is. I hope I'm worthy of you. I, honest to God, hope I'm worthy of you. Let's go to southern Mississippi. Let's join Sarge. Hey, Sarge, thanks for waiting, man.
Hey, any time, Bob. I want to tell you that our friend from Germany, Angelica, said that she wanted to say hi to you and Agnes and that y'all were special people to her.
Well, we sure do cherish her, too, Sarge.
And now, on my behalf, let me say that today, Bob Kincaid, and I know you don't like compliments, and so you don't even have to reply to this, but today, in my book, sir, you are the greatest American alive because you gave us horn, and today it has been a lifesaver. And I salute you, I adore you, and I just totally am grateful for your devotion, for your what you mean to this nation. And you and Agnes and your family will always, in my book, rate as top-notch Americans.
Thank you, Sarge. Thank you very kindly. We'll, all I can promise is we'll try to live up to it.
Well, you have, sir. You have. And I want to... I'm not ranting, I'm not going to rave, I'm not going to cry, I'm not going to fuss. All I'm going to say today is there's a lot of people who's going to get some bad press from the old Sarge in the next few days.
You knocked their socks off, Sarge. They earned every bit of it.
Well, they're going to get it, and I've already I called John McCain's office right after his speech. And I started out nice, and I gradually got a little louder and a little louder, and finally I said, and as far as I'm concerned, he should have died in Hanoi Hilton because he's a disgrace to the uniform. The phone down.
You know, they're gonna have to take one of them Homeland Security prisons, Sarge, and they're going to have to condo it.
They're going to have to, man, because I just earned my stripes to it.
Jeez.
But hey, that's
but,
all right.
You know, but I understand, you know, I mean, these people have got to understand that they're going to stir up some passions. Especially, look at, you know, to me, McCain. I'll be honest with you, Sarge. McCain's a wasted call. I knew McCain was a lost ball in high grass when he stood there and let. You know, never mind what. I mean, I used. Oh boy, I'm. Okay,
well,
slow down. I used the Andrew Jackson standard on this. You know, there's a lot wrong with Andrew Jackson.
Yeah,
but. You know, they came out, you know, politics has never been nice in America, Sarge, but they came out and they attacked his darling wife, his dearest Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I will forgive them for what they have done to me, but I will never forgive them for what they did to my Rachel. And John McCain couldn't even live up to that. He let George Bush drag his wife and child through the mud in South Carolina when the Bush campaign ran that push poll there in 2000 saying, "Did you know John McCain's got a Negro baby?"
Exactly. That's disgraceful. And you know what I told his office, that I said, "Look, I'm a Vietnam era disabled veteran. I served in two branches of the military. And today I have never been more ashamed in my life of a fellow soldier, of a fellow trooper, than I am of John McCain. And I wish, and as far as I'm concerned, he is no longer a brother in arms. He is a traitor. He is a disgrace. And there is no excuse. He should never lift his head up. He should always be looking down at the pavement because he doesn't deserve to hold his head up."
Just you wait, though. Just you wait, though, Sarge. It won't be 2 days before he's referred to as Maverick Republican Senator John McCain.
Well, the first time I hear it, I guarantee you I'll be writing against it, because in my book, he is a traitor. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say that about a fellow vet, but if the shoe fits, he's going to have to wear it.
Yep, and I'm not thinking so much about shoes. I was thinking more, yeah, but yeah.
And I'm going to let you go, Bob, but once again, thank you so much for Horn. And no matter, I love Mike Malloy, and you know what I'm trying to do. I'm not going to say it. I'm going to let you tell it if you want to. If you don't want to, that's fine. But as far as I'm concerned, you will always be the top man at Horn.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very kindly.
There's no one that I would rate above you, not even Malloy.
I appreciate that, and that is extremely high. That's an extremely high compliment.
Well, thank you, sir, and I shall leave you tonight.
You take care, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Kind of makes my, I don't, I mean, God, thank you. What, Agnes? Keep rolling, go to the phones. Okay. George calls from Denver. George, welcome to the program. Thank you for your call.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm real good.
Good.
Hey, when I talked to you a few weeks ago, I forgot one really important thing I wanted to tell you.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to thank you for playing Ani DiFranco.
Oh.
Self-Evident.
Wasn't that amazing?
God, that was unbelievable. Just beautiful.
That was our good friend Ray Dean who sent that along to me, and it just blew me away.
It blew me. I played it 50 times. I was trying to hear every single word. And, you know, if you go to her website, what will pop up right at the beginning is that song. It's all the lyrics for it and everything.
Well, I think... That expresses so many of the things that I have thought, and she is such a profound, you know, she's not a rock star, she's a poet. I mean, she gets to be talked about in the same breath as Longfellow and Whitman and Lord Byron and Homer and that crowd. That is the weaving of a complete understanding of an entire circumstance, George, and it is mind-boggling to contemplate.
Well, thanks to the Head On Radio Network, I am an Ani DiFranco lifelong fan.
Well, I'm glad you are, because you know, if you like that, there's a whole bunch of other stuff out there too.
And you know, she wrote that, or she played it at sold out Carnegie Hall 7 months after 9/11. And I thought, wow, you are on top of things. Because I was still in shock. I had no idea the criminals that perpetrated 9/11 was our own government. She already knew it.
There were a lot of people who have suspected that kind of thing all along, George. And like I've said before, I'm not satisfied with what we were given in the 9/11 Commission report. I think that was as much of a whitewash as probably the Warren Commission was with regard to JFK's death. When you call the president and you ask him to answer some questions, and he says, "I won't come in without my vice president beside me, and neither of us will take the oath." How can you have any confidence that what you're being told is the truth? And the way to test that is to look at a criminal situation. And how would a cop react to being told, well, you know, we've got a murder suspect here, and we want him to come in, and he says, well, I'll come in, but I won't do it. Well, you know, it's
without my lawyer.
Well, no, it's not even without my lawyer. It's I won't do it without my daddy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's that the whole thing is just it inspires no confidence on the part of the American people, nor should it.
No, they were hiding something. They were hiding the fact that they did it. You know, when there's a picture I saw of the World Trade Center shortly after it came down. There's two firefighters standing there in the rubble, and there's a big column right behind them. Maybe you've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And that column is cut at a 45-degree angle, and you can clearly see the molten metal around it. Okay. The other day I went to a website, and they were showing how they demo buildings, and they put the charges on a 45-degree angle, and it was unbelievable to see all these columns with this stuff. It's like in a like a rope. It, all at 45-degree angles on every single column, exactly like that column was. And what they call that in the demolition business is they call that walking the building. Because basically, that column is stepping off itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, that those trade centers, I don't see how...
There is no satisfactory answer to it.
There is no satisfactory answer, except for our government did it. And, you know, to have all the Air Force and everybody go to Greenland and everywhere, and we're playing war games of what if someone was trying to fly an airplane into a building right at the time it happened.
Well, yeah, and see, it was the G8 summit in Genoa where they moved Bush from the hotel he was in offshore to some sort of ocean-going vessel for the duration of the stay, because they had been specifically warned that terrorists would use planes, this was the quote, planes as missiles.
Yeah.
And then Condi Rice comes out and says, well, you know, nobody could have imagined that the terrorists would ever use planes as missiles. You know, when she was directly warned herself. She was National Security Advisor, for God's sakes.
You know, when this happened and Bush was at the elementary school, and I saw him just sitting there not doing anything, and I'm like, I can't believe he's just sitting there not doing anything. I didn't understand what really happened. Because what really happened was he was on the freeway in his motorcade when he knew that four commercial airliners were hijacked and one had hit the Trade Center. And
what?
Yet he still decided to go to the school? That makes no sense.
Well, he said I saw it on TV when the first when the first plane hit, and I thought, boy, that's some bad pilot.
Yeah, he did see it on TV. He saw it on the closed circuit television in his limo, and they were actually filming it while it was going on. And when you know, if we were able to have an investigation, all these things would come out.
If you were able to put him under oath, have him in the dock,
right?
Yeah, sure.
Well, and that's why he had to have Cheney, because he didn't trust him.
But see, I noted what our good friend Rick said a few minutes ago. If everything is as they claim it is, George. Why did he sit there? Because they've talked about, well, you know, we had to hustle the president off onto Air Force One, and we flew him to Louisiana, then we flew him to Nebraska, and blah, 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 blah. Why did he sit there for 7 minutes putting all those children at risk?
Yeah. And I think it was a lot longer than that. Well, 7 minutes then, and then another 15 to shake hands.
Yeah, there was a photo op. You're absolutely right.
Oh, it was unbelievable. And why wouldn't he? A five-year-old would say, excuse me, kids, I have some business I have to go to attend to.
Grown-up stuff, sorry.
Yeah, something's come up.
I mean, you know, we've played the grown-up stuff card here, you know.
I believe the only thing that explains it is they did it. And, man, I'd love to bust them on this. You know, the day before 9-1-1, here's Rumsfeld sitting in the Congress telling them that the Defense Department lost $1 trillion. They're looking all over for it, but they can't find it. And I thought, what an opportune time to tell the Congress that you lost $1 trillion. Less than 24 hours, you know, 9-1-1 happens.
Right.
And then, and since then, they've lost another $3 trillion. So they're up to like $4 trillion that they've lost. They're just accounting.
Well, yeah, $9 billion in the sofa of the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq. $9 billion is just gone. I mean, sworn testimony, George, sworn testimony from people who did it in the civil suit for Custer Battles. It was overturned, but the sworn testimony wasn't. That they called them footballs. They were shrink wrapped wads of $100 bills, bricks, and they would take these things out on the tarmac at Baghdad International, and they would play football with them.
Well, when the contractors came to get paid, they had to bring their own duffel bag. That's
yeah.
what I heard.
Well, you know, it's kind of like Sam's Club. We don't provide the bags.
But, you know, last time I talked to you, I'm the one that believes that... Well, were you able to see those pictures of Bush standing at the school book depository?
Yes. Bizarre.
It's Bush. You know, if it was any other circumstance, I'd go, oh, I don't know, maybe, you know. No, that is him standing there. I know it is. How about the wink that LBJ got?
Yeah, those are all disturbing.
And that congressman, he was in with Brown and Root. He gave Brown and Root the contract for this.
Well, see, very few people remember, I guess, anymore, that Brown and Root was just a little low-rent, more or less, low-rent ditch-digging firm when LBJ went to Congress. LBJ steered, and you know, this isn't conspiracy theory stuff, George. These are verifiable historical facts. LBJ steered horse-gagging loads of federal dollars for dam building and road construction in Texas. Now, I may have the specifics wrong, but I think there were some sort of waterworks involved. But profound amounts of money to Brown and Root, okay? And that was what really put them on the map. By Vietnam, they have become Kellogg, Brown, and Root because troops over there came to refer to them as Kellogg, Burn, and Loot. And they were the ones who designed and manufactured the infamous tiger cages in which we held Viet Cong so-called insurgents. You know, suspended off the ground, just vile, vile treatment
torture.
Of other human beings.
Torture?
Yeah, in a word.
So, if I'm right, that Bush had played a major hand in planning the execution of our president, and then as payback, he became president. That was a payoff. And look what that little sucker did. He was bringing in cocaine from Panama. They were taking CIA planes full of arms to Panama, unloading them. That's where Noriega comes into it.
Right.
They unloaded them. As soon as they got all the weapons off, they packed that plane, CIA plane, full of cocaine, and they flew it back here into the United States.
Yeah.
And I was watching C-SPAN during all this, and I was watching person after person say, George, these are all CIA guys because they set them up. Now they're all in prison. But each one that came before Congress said it was George Bush running the whole thing.
Jeez. Gee whiz.
But when you look at all the bad that this shadow government has done, I believe they went over to Iran and made a deal to hold the hostages for an extra couple hundred days.
Sure.
Through Carter.
Yeah.
And they let Carter win to make it look like we had a democracy. This shadow government, and then they just kept him pinned in with the media that they own lock, stock, and barrel. And you know what? The media, they have all stepped out of the shadows now. The only real media is Head On Radio Network, Oberman, and Hartman.
Yeah, Consortium News out there, Robert Perry.
Yeah.
Truth Out does a great job. Our buddies, WD40.com, PowersandMorrison.com. There are places you can go to try to get your own, to try to put together your own sane synthesis of what's going on in the world around you. But, you know, the rest of it, it's dead.
Like Charlie Rose, what a Nazi that guy is. I mean, he is a Nazi. And in 60 Minutes, boy, they sure showed their true colors, haven't they?
Oh, sure. And, well, I mean, you know, Chris Wallace, you know, what do you want? The king of them all, I guess, you know, Dr. Falafel, the Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
You know, these things masquerade as news. Now, I'll come out and tell anybody that cares to ask, and some who don't, George, I'm not a journalist. I am, and I'm not an, and you know, Rush Limbaugh says, no, I'm not a journalist. I am an entertainer. I'm not an entertainer either. I'm neither journalist nor entertainer. I am, for want of a better word, a conversationalist. We talk politics every night here because that seems to be one of my obsessions. But I'm equally comfortable talking about a lot of other things. I love to talk to America, George, and America wants a good conversation. That's why this network was formed. And the fact of the matter is, I'm not going to pretend that I'm something I'm not. On the other hand, Bill O'Reilly thinks he's a journalist. Tucker Carlson thinks he's a journalist. Keith Olbermann is a journalist.
That's right.
John Stewart is more of a journalist than Katie Couric will ever think about being.
Wasn't it funny when O'Reilly came out with his new book for children?
Oh, Lord.
At the same time that the falafel came out?
that was just brilliant. It was beautiful. George, so good to hear from you. I hope we'll hear from you again soon. I enjoy our conversation. Absolutely. Take your time.
The space shuttles. Two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Challenger. You know, that wouldn't have blown up had the shadow government not been running things at the time, because that was all political. Just everyone at NASA said, do not fly. They knew for a fact that in cold weather, the O-rings don't work.
Yeah.
Because those things fall back down in the ocean, and they look at them, and there's a thing called blow through or whatever. And the bigger the blowout, it was because colder weather. Colder you got, the bigger the blow through. And but yet they launched that because Reagan wanted it. They wanted to talk to that teacher in space because politically it was for the State of the Union.
It was a win-win.
Oh yeah.
Look at the Beirut barracks bombing. Now this isn't conspiracy theory. This isn't me running off on some sort of wild supposition. It is known fact out of the mouths of the people who advised him. He was advised by his military people. President Reagan, please don't put those Marines on the ground in Beirut. It's not safe for them. Let's keep them offshore. Let's keep them on the carriers. They can be there as quickly as they could be if they were mustering out of that barracks in Beirut. Please, President Reagan, please let's keep them on the troop ships. And he said, no, we need to have boots on the ground and we need to show the flag. And what, 286 Marines died because of Ronald Reagan's stinking vanity?
A terrible death. One more space shuttle.
Okay.
This last one.
Yeah.
Was Atlantis, I think.
Mm-hmm. No, Columbia. Was it Columbia or Atlantis?
Well, yeah, whatever one, the last one that went down.
Right.
The only camera, out of the millions of cameras that are looking at this thing, the only camera that was broken was the one that would see the hole in the wing. That's a gigantic hole in the wing. See, they knew that those people were all doomed. It was Bush people running it. They knew that plane had a big hole in it because they could see it with that camera, the one that they're telling us is broken. It wasn't broken. They could see it, and the reason they didn't want to tell us, because we're going into Iraq and we don't want to distract anyone.
Oh, I was afraid we were going to nuke North Korea over that one. I thought they were going to swear that North Korea had shot it down. I mean, that's the level of concern that I've been taught to have now. Plus, don't forget that we have, NASA has a minuscule budget now, but what budget NASA has is largely outsourced to corporate technology sources. You know, remember it was Morton Thiokol that said, what the hell, send Challenger up. You know what I mean?
Well, I know all the engineers were saying, whatever you do, you fly it today, it's coming down.
Right, but the CEO said,
yeah,
it goes up, who cares where it goes down, it's not our concern. Yeah, and that's the way corporate power operates in this country. Concern only for their own financial bottom line, and zero concern for the human lives that are involved with the process. George,
you know where we could have been at this point had we not let these criminals keep jumping in and running our, the good that the real Americans have done.
It makes my eyes roll back in my head when I think, I wasn't even a year old when Kennedy was killed. And
I was like 6 or 7.
Yeah, and it's the more I look back at it, the more I feel like my America was the potential of the America that my parents' generation expected to hand me was turned on its ear at that point.
It was two roads, one to the left, one to the right. A beautiful road that Kennedy had planned for us all, for the whole entire world. When he gave that speech and he said, "Ask not what,"
mm-hmm.
Well, after he said that little paragraph, then his last one paragraph to that was, "To the citizens of the world, ask not what America can do for you, but what we can do working together for the freedom of mankind." Now, he's a beautiful human being, and he got murdered by these vicious killers that are running our government right now. And maybe what we need to do is do what Mexico did. Maybe we need to elect somebody to be our president and start setting up our own little government here, just like they're doing in Mexico.
Yeah, down in Oaxaca?
Yeah. Yeah. We need to start doing something because the Democrats are a bunch of criminals. Just like just a handful of good Democrats arrest are just criminals.
There's enough of a core maybe to start working with, George. I don't know. Yeah. I have to hope that there are.
I hope so too. But maybe eventually, if not, maybe we could start coming up with a plan.
Might not be a bad idea.
I'm real worried about Iran.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful country, and I believe that these criminals could probably do something terrible to them.
They would not hesitate to nuke them. They would not hesitate to poison them, gas them, biological them, because, you know, all these things that we profess to be worried about, we have stockpiles of in the billions, George.
I'm worried they're about to plant a false flag, you know,
mm-hmm.
against Iran. I don't know if I said that right, but you know what
I mean. No. I know exactly what you're talking about.
That we have to go get them. Nuke them.
Yeah, we must.
Yeah.
Well, look at, dadgummit, we're running out of time.
Okay.
But look at what the House Intelligence Committee, was it last week and a half ago or so, put out this completely dummied up report on Iran that said that they're already enriching uranium for a nuclear weapon when the IAEA had to come out and say, you know, just stop lying. Because the most that they've been able to enrich to is 3.5%. It takes 90% enrichment to get to weapons-grade uranium. And it was just an outright lie on the part of the House Republicans. And Negroponte vetted all of that before it came out. Yeah, I mean, you're afraid that they're going to? No, George, they have. And they're running it up the pole.
Well, this whole Iraq thing was just a plan to get ready to do the main job that they've wanted to do. Iran was the main goal from the beginning. Iraq was just to keep all the idiots looking that way while we build our bases and get ready to attack them.
Lord, where are the troops going to come from to do it, though?
Well, that's where the nukes and the chemical weapons come in.
Oh, you know? God, and the torture and the habeas corpus. George, we do have to go. I've got to run news.
Great talking to you, Bob.
My pleasure. I hope we'll hear from you again soon. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Be well. News, and then we come back with more of your phone calls at your leisure. Get it off of your chest tonight. This hurts. This aches what's been done to our country. Do not let it fester inside you. When you are silent, you surrender. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
News Network. The Senate has passed the terror detainee bill, which authorizes terror suspects to be prosecuted in a military court system. The bill will go to President Bush in the coming days for him to sign into law. In Florida, police continue searching for a suspect who killed a deputy and police dog near a high school today after he was pulled over for speeding. Three schools are under lockdown while the search continues. An audio tape purportedly from the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq calls for more attacks and the abduction of foreigners. That's to force the release of a radical Egyptian cleric from a U.S. prison for his role in the 1993 World Trade Center attack. On Capitol Hill today, Baghdad's police academy was held up as an example of the United States' failures in its $21 billion reconstruction efforts. The academy was deemed a health hazard by U.S. inspectors who found human waste dripping from the ceilings. Also on Capitol Hill, the House passed the Iran Freedom Support Act. It imposes mandatory sanctions on people and companies who provide support for Iran's chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons programs. The Senate is expected to act quickly on the bill. In Berlin, talks between the European Union foreign policy chief and Iran's chief nuclear negotiator ended today without a deal. Another round of talks will be held soon. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says his country will not stop its nuclear program for a single day. In London, a leaked document from a researcher at a defense think tank accuses the Pakistani intelligence agency of indirectly supporting al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. Today, Musharraf met with British Prime Minister Tony Blair. They brushed aside the report and pledged to support a NATO-led mission to support the Kabul government. In Washington today, a State Department official said the U.S. is suspending nearly $24 million in aid to Thailand. He said that's in response to a recent military coup, which he described as a setback for Thai democracy. Thailand's military rulers say they have already chosen a new prime minister for an interim government, which will be installed soon. However, they would not name that individual. In Southern California, more than 4,000 firefighters still battling the Day Fire in Ventura County. Now in its 25th day, one of the largest and longest burning brush fires in the state's history. You're listening to QNN.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
A new study finds that the parents of children taking medication to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder are 10 times more likely to be taking the medication themselves. Billionaire Richard Branson today unveiled the interior of the spacecraft he's building. He hopes to offer space travel to the public as soon as 2009. Current and former Hewlett-Packard executives appeared before a congressional subcommittee today to answer questions about the media spying scandal. Patricia Dunn, who resigned as chairwoman last week, expressed deep regret over how the investigation was handled. Also today, HP's general counsel, Ann Baskin, who didn't have any pieces of point from the previous week. IBM is the latest computer company to recall Sony laptop batteries. IBM is recalling 526,000 of the lithium-ion batteries used in ThinkPad notebook computers. Less than 1 year since ESPN announced a cell phone company for sports fans, it will be closed down. Several prominent scientists have formed a political organization called the Scientists and Engineers for America. The group says it formed because current politicians are suppressing scientific evidence about issues such as global warming and stem cell research. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 29 points to 11,718, NASDAQ up 7, S&P 500 up 3 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
We're going right back to the phones in a second, the number you just heard. But I've got an email from our friend Andy in the Netherlands. And this says so much. He says, what a day. There go my plans for the future. I've been saving up my money for several years now for my plans to travel back to the good old U.S. of A to live and work. Even yesterday, I dusted off my green card and went down the proverbial memory lane, remembering old friends and special times and places. I even took out my Reader's Digest Atlas of the USA and went shopping for a place I'd want to try my luck in. But today, never mind. America is now officially no longer the place I remember. Damn it, damn it, damn it. But don't worry about me. please, let me worry about you, all of you. All you Americans will remain special to me, but I don't know if I'll ever return. With thoughts and prayers, Andy in the Netherlands. What have we allowed these monsters in the House and the Senate to do to the good name of our nation? And Andy, I don't mean to make it any worse, brother, but you know what? Under this law, they can come to the Netherlands and get you. They can go any, they have set up a law that makes it possible for them, so they believe, to go anywhere on earth and get anyone they want for any reason that they want, real or pretended. The world is not safe with the Bush administration in office. It is that simple. It is that dire. It is that direct. It is that immediate. Let's go to the phones. Jim has another thought for us. Jim, welcome back.
Not much of a thought, Bob, but it's just another example, in my opinion, of man's inhumanity to man. I mean, when you read history, and you can read many facets of it, and one comes to mind, the early Christian church, for example, when Nero used Christians to light his garden, right?
On the Vatican Hill, yes.
And then less than 200 years later, the same church was conducting the auto da fe in Spain and burning people.
Killed the Cathars in France.
Yeah.
The Albigensian Crusades. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just your mind is just racing toward the edge of a cliff, and there's just no explanation for it. And
except perhaps to say that we like it, Jim. There will always be someone within the elements of the human society and human culture that enjoys exercising absolute dominion, control, power, and even sadistic practices over other human beings.
Well, you know, it's just my own personal spiritual belief of proof of that there are definite forces of evil at work. And you can call it by any name. You can call him by any name, the person who's causing it or the people who are causing it. But it's just another example of the frailty and foible of mankind, and the fact that you really can't place a whole lot of faith in anything of this world in which we live. I don't know when this world has ever been a really safe place in which to live. Can you tell me of any time when the world has been safe? Really?
Only pockets of it. The world has never been at utter peace. That is not within recorded history. And even in unrecorded prehistory, Jim, whether it's Cro-Magnon or Neanderthal, they were wandering around the earth bashing the skulls in of somebody else.
Right. And then you look through other periods of later history, and you see what happened to men like St. Thomas More.
Yeah, Thomas More, or a man considerably different from him, Robespierre, who enjoyed the guillotine and then wound up getting it used on himself. Gandhi. Peter Abelard and Eloise.
All right. I guess the point about calling you back is just, if you just look at, say, you know, just pick up your history books and just read and see the track record we've had since we've been able to organize ourselves and into types of governments and things like that.
Was it Yitzhak Rabin, Jim, who tried to work toward a Palestinian peace process? Was it Yitzhak Rabin that was assassinated?
Right, I do believe he was.
Yitzhak Rabin had said prior to his assassination that human history is a story writ in blood, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said it is time that we start trying to find another way to tell our own story, because as long as what passes for history is the story of man's inhumanity to man, we will continue to persist in making our history that way. And well, I thought it was one of the more profound things that I'd read in a while.
Well, I mean, yeah, for example, a couple of years ago, I read a biography of Tsar Alexander II. And he had just issued a manifesto, which was the beginning of some type of freedom to serve. It wasn't a perfect document, but it was a manifesto. And on his way back from signing that manifesto, he was blown to pieces by an anarchist bomb. I mean, it seems as though they always try to kill the good men who try to do something good.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just goes on. And then you get into the last lyrics of that old song, Sympathies for the Devil, when he said, I killed the Kennedys, it was you and me.
Yeah.
So it goes. I mean, I have no answers. And the only thing I can say with any assuredness is the fact that, personally, I've never tried to do anything to hurt my country. And I've tried to do the best I can to serve its interests, to, in my own small way, as insignificant as those contributions have been, to be loyal to it and support whoever has been in charge, regardless of whether I agree with him or not, because I raised my right hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, the sad thing, Jim, is that there are people out there who spit on that service. And I'm not talking about any liberal, any progressive. I'm talking about the people who are in power now. They don't care about you. They don't care about any other veteran. As Rick Goodner was talking about earlier, the Bush administration is actively engaged in trying to convince disabled veterans that they can't have benefits that they are legally entitled to. It's amazing.
Well, you know, honestly and truly, when you look back at the way people are and the people behave and their avarice and greed and their lack of farsightedness, it's always been the short-term thing. And then when that short-term thing was either accomplished or not accomplished, it's so much blood and so much treasure. Then 6 months later, people couldn't figure out what it was all about and why it happened. I'm not making any sense tonight, and I'm wasting your time.
No. You're making plenty of sense, and you're not wasting my time, Jim. You're speaking to the scope and the attention span of the American people, and it is tragic. We only live in our own times, so we are hard pressed to say that it has ever been better or worse among the American people. We know for a fact that when the American Revolution was begun, that only something on the order of 30% of the people supported it.
Well, you're right, and
there are always going to be camp followers. There are always going to be people who are going to show up for the parades after all the fighting is over, but they're nowhere to be found when it's time for the fight to go down. And I have a lot of regard for the folks who share their time in listening to this program, because it tells me that they're going to continue to talk, they're going to continue to process, they're going to continue to think. And as long as we're doing that, you know, at some point we can come up with some level of opposition, whether it's talking to your neighbor or a salesman in a store, like I ran across yesterday. Opposition happens, and I'm sure you're aware of this, opposition happens in a thousand little ways. And we can all be responsible for some of that. We can all do something. That was the lesson of the Second World War. Whether it was your victory garden or your scrap metal drive or women who cut their hair and sent it to the government from the manufacture of bomb sites, every last person in this country was capable of doing something to help save this country. And everyone did.
Yes, they did.
And we can reignite that spirit.
But, you know, if better goes to worse, the only thing I can say is, as I guess, is, or what I hope I can say is, that when my time comes, it's what Sir Thomas More said when they were about to cut his head off, and he told the executioner, he said, you're doing me a favor. You're sending me to God. And I think it was Cranmer, the archbishop, who said, are you sure, Sir Thomas? And he looked at me and said, God will not refuse anyone who is so blithely willing to come to him.
I like the first part of that. God will not refuse anyone. You know what I mean? And that's
him so blithely. Right.
Right. Well, Jim, thank you very kindly.
Good night, sir.
You have a good evening. This is a searching. This is a digging. This is a reaching out, a reaching to one another to find. You know, how do you respond to know that a handful of Republicans whom you expected to do it, or a room full of Republicans who you expected to do it, and a handful of Democrats who you didn't. They couldn't have done any more had they gone to the National Archives, pulled their trousers down, and collectively peed all over the Constitution. There is no difference between that and what they did today. There is so much of what I feel and about this country that I love so dearly, that I want so badly, so badly. To live up to its ideals and the vision set forth and the promises made. There's so much that I want to happen that I feel what you do when you communicate it. It is, I keep describing it, and the only word I can come up with for it is an ache. It is a visceral ache for someone. For someone who will stand up in this nation and lead. Not a weaselly little creature of manufacture like George Bush with phony leadership and phony rallies and photo ops and backdrops that leading America forward. Not that crap. Real leadership. The kind of stuff that other generations had before them and had available to them. You know, the only generation that I can think of that was leaderless, or not generation, but decade, is the 1920s. Those poor people were saddled up with Warren Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and Herbert Hoover. I mean, that's like the 1980s, when we were saddled up with Ronald Reagan and George Bush. Blech. And look at the awful things that happen to America when America has no leader. I mean, it's like something out of Arthurian legend. You know, just eternal night falls upon the land.
Oh, yes, I do.
And we are in a darkness. Right now, we have entered a darkness. Somewhere around 1946, 1947, 1948, Winston Churchill went to my alma mater in Missouri. And he said, "An iron curtain has fallen across the face of Eastern Europe." Do we need to start working up our own analogy for the curtain that has fallen across America? An America that has determined it is no longer interested in the rules of civilized society. Is it time for a new analogy? I will leave that to your... to your determination. Because I'm just mentally drained. I'm stunned. Iron curtain? Nah, this isn't iron. It's not titanium. It's not radioactive. What kind of curtain is this? Is this a curtain of sleaze? Is it a curtain of blood and tissue and sinew and bone? Ground up. And obscuring this nation from the civilized march of society. I don't know. It's about 23 and a half minutes after the hour where I am here. Let's take a quick break and then come back and do a bunch of phone calls, okay? A bunch of phone calls. This is the Head On Radio Network. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your thoughts. Because you know what? You're saving my sanity, too. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
hour. You guys picked the dickens of a time to stack up the phones. We may have to run long. I'm going to...
pray and meditate. We drink a tea from the forest in Brazil. And we, what we attempt to do is to send white light, send positive energy. And we believe that even though our groups are very small, there's, I think there's, I don't know how many churches in the United States, that our small positive quest is can somehow influence and change things a bit. And that's, and I've been doing it. It's been very, very positive for me. And I was raised an atheist. I was an atheist until I was 44. And it's been something very positive for me, and it's made me more politically aware and more active through doing this. I didn't become a Christian, although most of the people in the group are Christians, but it's a very accepting group. I'm Jewish still, but this is something I do. And when, you know, everybody's feeling all down and unhappy and things, but I have found happiness there, and I feel like I am doing something to change my own life as well as trying to affect some kind of positiveness in the world and shedding some light into the darkness.
Well, that's where religion, or, you know, I hesitate to use that word. That's where faith is supposed to go, Mike. Don't you agree?
Oh yeah.
That's why I have the differences that I do. For instance, with the cult in which I was raised, the Southern Baptist Church. And it's a cult. I don't have a problem saying that. You know, they get real mad and want to punch you in the face if you, when you say it to them. But that kind of proves my point too. It's any spiritual searching has got to be personal. That's why I was so moved when we had Bishop Pearson on the program a month or so back, because he was talking about, and his book is out now. I should probably mention that. It's called The Gospel of Inclusion.
Nice.
And he is proclaiming a there is no hell message.
Oh, is he the African American man?
Yes, he's from Tulsa.
And, oh, the guy who was thrown out of his church, out of the mega church.
Right, the left foot of fellowship, as he so well put it.
He was crucified like Jesus himself.
Just about, yeah. If they could, I think if they could have gotten to him, they would have. Because when you walk out and he was trained at literally at the feet of Oral Roberts. And he has come out and had a revelation. He's had his road to Damascus experience. The light's gone on, and he's realized that that salvation is something that every person contains within themselves. Period. And that it's only for us to recognize. The closest thing that I could get to it was the spirit that was embodied in the old Heinlein novel, The Stranger in a Strange Land, where they propound the idea of Thou art God.
Hey, I grok you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, waiting is. Mike, so good to hear from you.
It's real good to hear from you. One last suggestion.
Yes.
Let's get one woman on there to do a program on Head On Radio. And I love the community. I love Southerners, Northerners, Westerners, Easterners. We're all there together. We're all progressive people.
Well, you know, Mike, you're 100% correct on what you say about getting a woman on here. I want to. All I've got to do is find find her with, and she's got to have the drive to do an everyday show. And the other hang up is she's got to be able to do it for the same money that everybody else is doing it on this network.
Well, that's cool. But I love the community. I get a warm, good feeling listening to you and hearing the callers. And I'd love to meet Sarge one day. If you're listening, Sarge, I got to meet you one day.
All right. Yeah, he's in the chat room. I know he just heard you.
All right. Take care.
You take it easy, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Drive safely in the Greasemobile. I love the idea of the Greasemobile. Let's go to Lee calling from North Carolina. Are you there, Lee?
Are you there?
I'm right here. You there?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to let you know that you're not alone tonight. You know?
I appreciate that.
You were talking about the Iron Curtain and what kind of curtain we have.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a curtain or a veil of cowardice in this country. I can't understand how the so-called children, the children and grandchildren of the so-called greatest generation have turned out to be the most cowardly.
generation in the history of the United States. I don't understand the Democrats' reasoning for not filibustering this disgusting bill. The Democrats, the ones that voted for it, and the ones that voted against it. I mean, they all have some blame.
Well, I was asking earlier, and I haven't seen it. I will try to find it, Lee. I assume that somewhere along the way there was a cloture vote on this bill.
Yeah.
And, of course, the cloture vote frequently tells you more about the bill itself than does the actual vote on the legislation, because the cloture vote will tell you how many were there who were willing to persist. Can you believe this? The Senate, who were willing to persist in debate. Lee, the Senate of the United States has had this bill from the House only one day.
They haven't even had time to read it to see what's in it.
Right. And I started trying to read it earlier this evening, and it just it makes your eyes roll back in your head after a while. And I'm used to reading some pretty serious legal gobbledygook.
You know, I can only imagine that they sat back and said, "Hey, just be quiet, be cool. We're trying to take the Congress back, and when we take it back, we can pass a bill to overturn this." Okay. Well. One thing that they didn't realize, I guess they do realize it, or they should, that even if they did pass legislation to overturn it, they don't have the votes to overturn or to block a veto that Bush is going to throw at it. Secondly, I hear a lot of people say, well, it's unconstitutional. Clearly, okay? Yes, it is clearly unconstitutional. The Supreme Court will throw it out. Well, they got us on that one, too, because the Democrats laid down and gave Bush the Supreme Court.
Yeah, they gave him John Roberts. They gave him Sam Alito. He's already got Scalia and Thomas. And, you know, you get one of those other little Republicans with the tiniest authoritarian inkling, and bang, there's your five for your majority. So any, you know, I have no faith in the Supreme Court of the United States striking down any of this.
Well, you know, I had always thought, you know, from the beginning of Bush's administration, when the Democrats just started, just laid down on everything, they totally collapsed on everything. George Bush's father was CIA director.
Right.
Can you imagine how much dirt he must have on each and every one of them?
Probably something similar to the ability that J. Edgar Hoover had to go and drop files on the desk of John Kennedy. Of course, that story is very well known at this point. It is said that Kennedy wanted to get rid of J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
And Hoover walked in and dropped a dossier on Kennedy's desk with a bunch of photographs of Kennedy doing very, very naughty sex things. You know, hanging out with known Nazi spies in London, that kind of thing.
We've got a Congress that is, I don't know if it's the majority body made up of lawyers, but a good percentage of them are lawyers. Has any of them ever read the Constitution? Have they ever read the Bill of Rights?
Well, you know,
have they ever read the Declaration of Independence?
I know Byrd has. Byrd can quote quote just about everything there is, chapter and verse. But once you've read it, do you the next question is one, Lee, of comprehension. Do you understand what it really, really means? I mean, I can't. Of all the lawyers who sit in Congress, did anybody bother to quote Thomas Jefferson?
Well, you know, as far as understanding, it's not that difficult. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
Well, exactly.
Not all Americans.
And this
not all non-terrorists. All
yeah.
men.
Right. And he said as much. It's this letter to A.H. Rowan in 1798, Lee. I led the program with it. The habeas corpus, Jefferson writes, secures every man here. And these are his words, not mine. Every man here, alien or citizen, against everything which is not law, whatever shape it may assume. That's not confusing.
Oh,
there's no gray areas there. That's Thomas Jefferson saying that some dude in Afghanistan, if we take him into custody, that he has habeas corpus rights.
Absolutely.
Jefferson dealt with the Barbary pirates.
The Declaration of Independence, I mean, basically, the reason we have a nation is because they had grievances against George III of England. And among those grievances was, just a few, for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us. Now, that's not something that applies to this, but the next statement is, and you really need that to understand it, for protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states.
Yes.
Bush is protecting the CIA and everybody else in his administration by
mock
trial.
Well, you remember the Boston Massacre, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't there, neither was I. But the Boston Massacre took place. That was a massacre committed by British troops on American soil. I think it's pre-Declaration of Independence, but it really. But the point was, those were alien troops, okay? Mm-hmm. John Adams undertook their defense, and they were defended in a trial in courts here. We afforded the troops of the Boston, the British troops of the Boston Massacre, a zealous defense.
Absolutely. And, you know, another clear statement, you don't have to interpret it. You don't have to look anything up. You don't need a lawyer. For depriving us, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury. Clear. For transporting us beyond state to be tried for pretended offenses. Clear.
Well, and that's why...
taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government. Clear.
Crystal clear, because George Bush's secret prisons are a perfect example of what Jefferson was talking about in the Declaration when he was talking about the being transported to distant lands.
Yes.
And show trials and mock trials. You're absolutely right. That's one of the things that's most stunning about all of this is that the senators who voted in favor of this garbage, especially the treasonous 12, They did so in the face of an entire volume of American jurisprudence and American law and American philosophy and American decency that told them not to do it. And it just blows me away.
And the Democrats that even voted against it, not a single one of them went up to the rooftop and shouted, "I refuse to allow this. We must filibuster. I demand that we filibuster."
It just wasn't there, was it?
They just went along.
Because they think they're going to get the Senate back.
What are they going to do with it when they get it?
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
I'd like to know. George Bush can veto anything meaningful. And they don't have, what would it take? Is it 70%? To override a veto, something like that?
Two-thirds,
okay. 60%, 66%. Well, like I said, I feel your pain. It's a sad day for America, and it pains me to think that my generation is the one that's going to go down as the most cowardly in our history.
It's mine, too. I mean, my parents were both children of the Depression, Lee. I'm 43. I'm the last year of the so-called baby boom. It's my generation too. And yeah, it is cause for shame. And
I can't believe it. I'm a Vietnam era vet. I was in the Air Force. I didn't go over the fight, but I was in it. I was there to be called upon. And if I had known this, I'd have gone to Canada and stayed.
I can't argue
okay.
with you. I can't argue. Lee, thank you so much for your thoughts.
Thanks for listening.
My joy and my pleasure. Take care. Be well. And let's go to Gerard calling from Indiana. Hey, Gerard, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, it's a sad day indeed. You know, And to me, I got to tell you, this is like a visceral thing. I had this same feeling in my gut when the first time I heard that we were sending bombers in the first Gulf War. I had the same feeling in my gut. on September 11th, and I had the same feeling in my gut when I heard we were sending the bombers in on the second Gulf War.
After a while, you feel like you feel like a boxer who's in about round 15, don't you?
Yeah, and it just, you know, some of the stuff, yeah, I was listening last night, and you had a caller that said, you know, you come to expect something, you know. When you're dealing with a snake, you expect it to, act like.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this 12 that just laid down, what, you know, you mentioned J. Edgar Hoover. Is there a modern-day J. Edgar Hoover somewhere that's got something
on? I think that's what Lee was just putting forward, Gerard, is that, you know, does the Bush family have a dossier on everybody because of their CIA connections? Am I a paranoid for asking that question? Why? Where would, you know, Russ, again, the question was asked earlier this evening, where in the hell was Russ Feingold? Yeah, he opposed the bill, but they, you know, these guys do the math long before the vote's ever taken. Where was Harry Reid with a little arm twisting? I mean, is this all about political cowardice? Is that what this is? I mean, if it is, just say so.
Yeah, I'm watching Ted Kennedy today, and he's the one out there putting out these things. Well, you know, if some other country does thus and so, they're going to be war criminals. What is that? Is that just some sort of thing to say, hey, we're addressing the fact that our troops might be sus, you know, might suffer these same kind of things that we're already doing to, you know, other people from other countries?
Well, you know, one of the most disgusting parts of this bill is the catalog of things that other people can't do. I mean, there's a definition, you know, it's not the definition of what we can do to others. It's what we will try other people for doing to us. Section 950RR is torture. Any person subject to this chapter who commits an act specifically intended to inflict severe physical or mental pain or suffering, other than pain or suffering incidental to lawful sanctions, upon another person within his custody or physical control for the purpose of obtaining information or a confession, punishment, intimidation, coercion, or any reason based on discrimination of any kind, shall be punished. If death results to one or more of the victims by death or such other punishments as a military commission under this chapter may direct, and if death does not result to any of the victims by such punishment other than death as a military commission under this chapter may direct. Severe mental pain and suffering is defined as the meaning given that term in section 2340, (2) of Title 18. And it goes on. There's cruel and inhuman treatment, Gerard. Well, you know, we can't do that. Cruel and inhuman treatment. Serious physical pain or suffering means bodily injury that involves substantial risk of death, extreme physical pain, a burn or physical disfigurement of a serious nature other than cuts, abrasions, or bruises, or a significant loss or impairment of the function of a bodily member, organ, or mental faculty. Okay? All of that, we will try people without access to the actual judiciary of the country. We'll try them in front of a kangaroo court made up of predetermined military hooligans. Unfortunately, we can do all of that to anybody else.
You know, it's just sickening. It's just sickening. But, you know, I don't know if you saw the other day, Randy Rhodes had it on her website. She had an excerpt from a former Joint Chief of Staff I believe his last name was Butler. And he was during he was a career military person and was a part of the Joint Chiefs, I think, during the 30s.
Yes, Medley Butler. He wrote a book called War is a Racket.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm reading this stuff, and in the names that come up, you know, he was talking about the Brown, he's going to Cuba to fight for the Brown Brothers, which Brown Brothers Harriman was a banking house in New York City, which Prescott Bush was a part of, and through which, you know, him and Avril Harriman got together and was financing the Nazis as they were built, you know, growing in Germany. You know, and you look at this stuff, and I just, you know, you talk about the 12 senators who laid down. I just don't understand this. I just, when is somebody going to say, hey, you know, was it something like a J. Edgar Hoover shenanigans, or, you know, was an email sent out from some corporate boardroom that said, hey, you're not going to get your campaign financing like you thought if you vote against this bill, if you don't vote for this bill? You know, it's just beyond me.
I know.
Especially shocking because I'm a former Michigander, Debbie Stabenow. I just don't understand her. She's a person who, I happen to have a sister-in-law who worked for the Electrolux company up in Michigan, and she held Senate hearings when all these companies were moving to Mexico, were moving to China. That particular union at that company, they gave like $40 million in concessions, Bob, to the company, and the company still moved. And Debbie Stabenow was there trying to fight to keep this company in the U.S., and she held Senate hearings in Washington about it. And, you know, what have they got on it? I can't put those two things together.
Well, you know, I can't help but go back to that comment that I saw referenced on Bart Cop yesterday, to Bob Schrum's appearance on Hardball or whatever, where he was complaining about Clinton going after Chris Wallace and said, you know, we need to be nicer. It's election time. We can't fight these people. You know, I don't mean to offend anybody, but we're talking about sissy Democrats, Gerard, okay? We're talking about people who have, who've lost the will to fight.
Well,
Gerard, I'm afraid we've lost you, my friend. I hope we'll hear back from you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Oh, there you are. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Just this morning, I happened to see Imus in the Morning, James Carville and Paul Begalia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and touting their book, how the Democrats are going to take back the election, and how they're cheering, you know, what happened with the Chris Wallace interview, and how that was going to be a rallying point now. And then this afternoon, we get these people who just lay down. It's just beyond me. I'm sorry.
Well, Carville and Begalia were the ones who helped Clinton to fight back in 1992. And every time George H.W. Bush put something nasty out, they were there and they counterpunched and they made it hurt on Bush worse than he had hurt them. But you know, Bob Schrum is the one who advised John Kerry to pursue the victory by surrender strategy. That could very well have cost him the election. The consultants out there, the image people, the focus groupers, they're killing us, Gerard.
Yeah.
And even Al Gore understands now that he got killed by those people who said, well, you know, that message isn't focus grouping very well. We need to talk about something else. Yeah.
No,
they're murdering us.
And we just need to stand up because you know, if we do happen to win the Congress. I mean, I know in my representative, if the Democratic candidate gets elected, I'm jolly well going to be writing them letters like, okay, you know, what are you going to do now that you're there? Who are you going to network to make sure this type of thing doesn't happen anymore? You know, are you going to start impeachment proceedings against Bush? And if so, you know, what's your strategy?
Where would those 12 be in a trial of George Bush in the Senate, Gerard? Yeah, I know. Kind of turns your stomach, doesn't it? Gerard, I've got to roll on. I want to get one more call in here. I think we're going to be able to get everybody taken care of.
All right.
You have a good evening. Yeah. Thank you. Be well. And Gene, calling from Oregon. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I got a summer cold. It's been 85 here all week.
Oh, those are icky.
Yeah. I can't believe it's 85. do you... I got one question before, and I'm out in the hallway, so let me ask this question real quick.
Okay.
You think this was the October surprise that they're talking about?
No. I don't think so. This isn't the October surprise. The October surprise is we haven't gotten yet.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, I know. This is, and see, this is going to be the learning curve about October surprises. I think those 12 lay-down Democrats were trying to avoid one. I voted for the bill. I'm pro-national security. I'm strong on defense. See, look at me. I'm strong. I vote for torture and trashing 800-year-old laws. I'm so strong.
Anywhere, following George Bush, in their definition of torture, or strong, is...
Blanche Lincoln, for God's sakes, in Arkansas, found it in her soul to vote against this bill. And her colleague from Arkansas, David Pryor, said, nope. Gotta vote for torture. And this, that's in the Bible Belt.